Traveling the Vortex.
We've joined the Doctor as he traveled the Vortex and landed at episode number 91. Who do you think invented Yorkshire pudding? Pudding, yet savory. Doesn't it sound familiar? I'm Keith.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Glenn.
How are you guys?
Very good.
Very good.
What did you guys do this week?
Not much. Sarah and I...
picking up the sonic screwdriver. Gotta put it down. I'll be compelled to play with it. You'll hear a lot of this if I don't.
Sarah and I went to the Kansas City Renaissance Festival yesterday, and because we can't escape Doctor Who in any way, shape, or form, there was a Doctor Who wedding going on. We didn't get to make it to the ceremony, but I had a representative there watching. Just
wait,
happy,
what's that mean?
Happy coincidence. My mom was there and went to the wedding.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
Kellen and Kelsey went to Renfest for her birthday this weekend, and there's a picture of them in front of the TARDIS that I just saw on their
Facebook
page.
Oh, I didn't see that either. That's very cool. I wish I'd have gone to Renfest.
Everybody we know was at the thing.
There was a TARDIS.
Again, 2 weeks in a row now, I've had a chance to get my solo picture with the TARDIS.
Oh, and this TARDIS, no offense to the one at Vintage Dock, it was much nicer.
Yeah.
It looked really good.
It was really nice. But they had a wedding, a person dressed up as David Tennant married somebody. I don't know. Not in costume.
Married somebody.
I don't know these people. So if you're listeners,
good
hey.
Queen Bess?
it was somebody in Renaissance garb.
Oh, well, maybe it was Good Queen Bess.
So it was kind of a split Doctor Who Renaissance Festival wedding. They had a Weeping Angels there. And that's all the people in the wedding that I'm aware of. But later, I saw several people dressed as 11th Doctor.
How much would that bridesmaid's dress suck? Oh, you're getting married. Awesome. What are we doing? Yeah, about that. Here's your wings.
Spray paint your face silver.
Your silver gray spackling compound paint.
And you have to stand up there with your hands covering your eyes the entire time.
My mom said that they went through and explained a lot of the stuff about Doctor Who to the audience, about regenerations, about the Weeping Angels, so they had somebody watching the way angels at all time. It sounded like it was a really cute ceremony.
Cool.
I saw several people dressed up
so
as
Keith,
11
for your
later.
Next wedding, you could...
I don't think so.
You're done after this
I'm
one.
I'm done after this one.
Sean, for your next wedding. Sean's done after his two.
Never again.
Then there were also a couple people that had Who shirts on. I saw one that was the Keep Calm, but it was Bow Ties Are Cool.
Very cool.
It was fairly enjoyable. Took Sarah's nephew, both of ours, it's weird to say our nephew,
yeah, nephew.
Along with my mother-in-law and brother-in-law, we all went as a family to the Renaissance Festival. And this was Audie's first exposure to the Renaissance Festival.
Cool. What do you think?
He wasn't that impressed until the jousting.
He liked the jousting.
He liked the jousting.
Oh, cool.
He fell asleep in the car on the way up, so that means he was cranky when he got out of the car and didn't want anything to do with anybody but Dad.
Yeah,
and
I know how that can be.
Yeah. So, I don't know,
no,
three and a half.
You don't have kids.
No, I'm talking about my wife.
Oh! I don't know if three and a half is quite.
So, for your next
right
wedding, you're doing.
No.
What did you guys do?
I did. We actually continued. This was week three for our Disney movie nights.
Very cool.
If I hadn't said this before, we're working our way up to going to Walt Disney World in December, which, by the way, we have our airline tickets now and our car rental. We have our deposit down on our resort, and everything's falling into place. So
nice.
It's coming along. And I've got my vacation approved, so that was
important. Oh, that's good.
You know.
I was about to say, now the next hurdle, getting vacation.
I was going to start spending money until I found out for sure. So that was actually the first thing. But at our work, sometimes we don't know until a week before whether we're getting vacations. So.
Honestly, when I went to go visit my sister a couple years ago, it was easier getting the vacation than saying, I've already got my tickets booked.
That's, you know, I told him, I said, this is what we're doing, and this is the only time we can go. So that was, that kind of got the approval early. Anyway, so this week's movie was, and we're getting the kids prepared for Disney World by watching movies, because there's a lot of Disney films that Mason just has never seen.
Oh, yeah.
Or was too young when we've watched them to remember them. So we're hitting the essentials, the things that you're going to, you know, go to a park and see represented. So we watched Peter Pan, and for our activity, we said the kids, Holly bought pirate costumes, just cheap pirate hats and hooks and swords and things like that. And Caitlin fortunately had part of her Halloween costume on because she's already bought her Halloween costume. She's going to be a pirate. So
oh,
that's where
nice.
the pink headscarf comes from. But anyway, so they dressed as pirates, and we had fish and chips for dinner. And then afterwards, Holly and I had made a map of our house with directions to buried treasure. But what they had to do first was they had to actually win pieces of the map. So we split the map into fours, cut it up, and then they both had to answer a trivia question, a Disney, just general Disney trivia question right in order to win a piece of their map. And once they won all four pieces of their map, they had to follow the route on the map throughout the house. And at the end was a treasure chest that Holly had found at the dollar store with these like doubloons. And we already had the movie. We set the movie up next to it, and then it had two little of those packs of chocolate coins that you could
nice.
Eat. So that was their snack for the movie. So
now, did they know in advance that it was going to be Peter Pan?
They knew it was going to be Peter Pan. They didn't know what the activities and the menu is. We typically surprise them with what we're going to do. You know, like last week, we told them early in the day that we were going to Olive Garden because we had to prepare them because Mason kind of has to be mentally prepared to go to Olive Garden. He doesn't like their mac and cheese that well, but but anyway.
So he has to prepare himself
exactly.
to eat
he
the mac and cheese.
He has to prepare himself to eat the mac and cheese. Although they got fish sticks last week, but yeah, he was kind of the only one that ate out of the theme. But
and custard?
Oh, yeah. No, it was chicken, not sorry, fish sticks.
So that's what you should do when you introduce Mason to Doctor Who proper.
There you go.
Sit him down with fish fingers and custard in the 11th hour.
So anyway, but yeah, we kind of surprised them with the activities and the games and stuff. So this week was Peter Pan. Then we sat down and we watched Peter Pan. So luckily they've been the shorter ones because Mason's able to keep his attention span a little better.
So they liked Peter Pan.
They did. Mason absolutely loved it. This is the first one. Lady and the Tramp, he liked. He sat down and watched it. But,
it's not 30, 40,
45 minutes, he gets a fidgety and antsy and starts, you know, roaming around. He's still watching the movie, but he's kind of doing other things.
Lady and the Tramp is boring.
This week. I love it.
It's boring.
Yeah. But anyway, this week he sat in two spots in the living room. That's when you can tell he likes something because
nice.
He didn't wander. He just went. He sat on the couch for a while. He sat on the floor in front of the TV, but back to the couch. That was the only places he ever sat. So.
I remember being captivated by Peter Pan when I was younger too.
I think one of the things he has going for him is he watches this show called Jake and the Neverland Pirates, which is a Disney Junior show, and it's. It's essentially set in Neverland, and there's these three pirates, and their nemesis is Captain Hook and Mr. Smee. So we already knew Captain Hook and Mr. Smee from that. Peter Pan has come to the island and helped the boys in these little specials that they've done. So he was familiar enough with Peter Pan. And he watches the Tinkerbell movies, because there's three or four Tinkerbell movies now where it's before she meets Neverland.
With all the other fairies.
Yeah, exactly. So he knows the character somewhat, but he had never seen it all in this reference, you know, the original where it all comes from. So
that's always when you see things out of order, it's always really cool to see it
where it
came from.
I think he was
no matter what age.
He was taken aback a bit though by the crudeness of Captain Hook, because Captain Hook's not now he's the bad guy in Jake and the Neverland, but it's for preschool kids. It's a learning show.
Captain Hook's a little intense.
So Captain Hook's pretty mellow in the Jake and the Neverland Pirates, but in the movie, he's pretty intense. He's an evil guy.
He's ready for Hook now.
That's not Disney, though. But we'll get there eventually, someday. Anyway, so that was the most exciting thing I think we did.
Oh, that sounds like fun to me.
The kids went to the zoo today. I had to actually go work, but the kids went to the zoo and saw the penguins because they're leaving this week. Captioning for...
Oh, okay. Yeah,
not work. Not,
that's
not
what
that
I was
work.
Like, huh?
Captioning Tough Grit.
So they went to say goodbye to the penguins?
Yes, they went to say goodbye to the penguins. They had a penguin send-off today, so they're only there for a few more days.
Speaking of Tough Grit, do we know the air date of that particular one?
Oh, no, but we could talk about it. I don't know when it is. It's Trucks and Trailers. Actually, I could probably find out.
Trucks and Trailers. It's Fencemen.
Or Fencemen. That's what I meant. I could probably find out real quick.
For those of you that may remember that Glenn and I are working on a show, Tough Grid.
Yes.
Yeah. I keep wanting to call it True Grid.
I do that every once in a while.
That's the movie.
Well, I do, because I say True Grid, and then I catch myself, and I say, no, it's Tough Grid. But when I say Tough Grid and I say it right, my brain still jarringly stops and goes, is that... Yeah, okay, you're good. so we've got this show. Well, they very clever, almost too clever, some people would say, writers of the fence mending episode did this cool thing, because it was the contests were going to be based on, maybe I shouldn't spoil that, but they were going to be doing some stuff by hand and then also doing some stuff like with automatic gate openers. So it was a real past and future kind of feel to it. So they had written in a very clever time travel feel to it. And we got word today that for all of you Doctor Who savvy people out there, there may just be a TARDIS groan that got edited in as a sound effect somewhere in the episode.
How appropriate is this? Post Braces and Gates airs tomorrow.
9/24/12.
Oh, so by the time most people would hear this, they could find hopefully the episode online.
Yeah.
Is that this one?
Yeah. Post Braces and Gates. Whoops. I
guess you're right. That's the name of that one,
yeah,
isn't it?
Well, that's not the actual name of it. That's what it...
Or that's the Good Fences Make Good Neighbors.
Yes, that's what it's actually called. But it's, yeah, it's...
On
my list here, it's based on what the projects
are. I saw a teaser online on Facebook for it, so yeah, it must be Monday. Yeah.
So that's what... So Monday. It will be Monday. Tomorrow, 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 Central. And I'm certain of that now. If you miss it, you can see it the following morning, Tuesday, at 9 a.m. Eastern, 8 Central. So, there you go.
And then
and it's on,
it'll also be on the website.
That's on eventually. RFD TV. And then, yeah, it should be on the website Tuesday afternoon.
Which we'll post a link to that if you want to catch it. But, yeah, supposedly there's a TARDIS groan that's kind of edited it into the sound effects of the time travel theme episode.
Clever.
So we're excited over
very,
that.
Very clever. Sean, what did you do this weekend?
I did all kinds of stuff this week. First, a story from last week. I won a rigged election.
You didn't introduce yourself as El Presidente this week.
I didn't. No, I didn't. I won a rigged election. Dr. Park's been kind of pressuring me to take over the film and video group on campus and you know, get it rolling, because she seems to think that I'm a go-getter kind of guy. And it's not that I'm not interested. It's an honor, and of course, you know, you ask me to do it, yes, I'm going to do it. But that's how I wind up with so much on my plate, because I can't tell people no. I just, you know, you want to be on the student media board? Yeah, okay. So she kept pushing this, and I served as a vice president last year. And, you know, we really, you know, everybody was excited and wanted to do this, that, and the other thing, and thinking that we're on step 57. Well, since this is, nothing happened last year. I mean, it was kind of dismal. So I went and got the official bylaws and delved into the, you know, a lot of research, a lot of intensive going to offices and who do I talk to on campus to get this, and going to meetings, which I hate, and doing all this. And I had to come back and say, guys, we're on step 4. We really, you're not ready for that yet. The first thing we have to do is we have to draft a constitution, and we have to report ourselves as eligible, and we have to get a university recognition, and if you're wanting to do anything real, we need a logo and all kind of stuff. So we spent all week doing all of this stuff because the deadline was Friday. And one of the things we have to report is our membership. We have to say this is, you know, the students that are involved in this. Before we could do that, we had to have officers. And Dr. Park looked at me after class one day and she said, well, I really want you to serve. And I said, well, you know, if it winds up being, you know, that way, then okay, yeah, I'll do it. And she says, no, I really want you to do it. And I looked at her and I said, I'm going to treat this kind of like George Washington. If I'm called to serve, I'll go. But I'm not going to campaign for it, and I'm not actively going to run. Somebody else is going to have to nominate me. So the nomination list comes out, and I get the email. And it's like, okay, our nominations are Sean Collins for president, Jeremy Finstad for vice president. They're the only two that were nominated for these two positions, so they're automatically going to serve in those categories. I was like, here's everybody else that you can vote for secretary, treasurer, and, you know. I'm like, man. And again, I mean, it's an honor. I'm not going to complain too much about it, but it's like, because I needed more to do. So, but we've got a very, very good staff now that I'm very hopeful. But then Thursday night, I got to spend my entire evening rewriting the Constitution because it hadn't been touched since the original Constitution. So I kind of had to update a few things on that and then get it to everybody and then spent, I guess that was Wednesday night, and then Thursday I had to go and actually get his recognition and all kinds of stuff. So we're an official campus group now.
So what step are you on?
With my what?
What step are you on now?
5.
After all that, after an entire week, focusing on this, you managed to get to step 5.
We're probably on 10 now. Here. But yeah. So I did that, and then this weekend, we spent a lot of time doing homework and whatnot. Had Katrina all weekend, which is a lot of fun. She's into that.
Every time you say Katrina, I know who she is. She's the cutest baby in the world.
She was adorable.
Every time you say we had Katrina, I was thinking you had some big hurricane come to your house or something.
We asked Cody. It's like,
sometimes
really?
It may feel that way.
You're going to name this kid after a hurricane? You really went there? But she is the cutest baby in the world. And just she dotes on me like nobody's business, which I love. I'm not going to lie.
She does love you.
She, you know, we take her home and she doesn't want to go to dad. She wants to go back to grandpa. And I giggle because that just makes me happy for some reason. But we had her this weekend. And Friday night, I got to go, after we got done shooting, came home, showered, jumped in the car and drove to Kansas City so that we could go to Vintage Stock in Overland Park.
Oh, that place we were at last weekend?
That place we were at last weekend.
Weren't you just there last weekend?
We were just there last
weekend. Why on earth would you go back to Vintage Stock this weekend in Overland Park when you were there last weekend?
Well, they had that nifty Doctor Who day, which is why we were there last weekend. And
we didn't mention that there was a drawing, did we?
There was a drawing at Vintage Stock. And this is, we should probably specify which one. This is the Metcalf store in Kansas City. Where is it? It just says Vintage Stock Metcalf. 9200 Metcalf Avenue, Overland Park, actually, Kansas. And there was a drawing, and they'd sent me an email and said, congratulations, you won the grand prize in our Doctor Who Day drawing. I'm like, sweet! I know it was all kinds of jazz. So I emailed them back and said, yeah, I'll get in this weekend. And I purposely didn't say anything to you guys. Because I thought, this is going to be great, because either Friday night, I'll get it after work, or sometime on the weekend, and I'll have it for either Friday Night Who or podcast, and I'll just, look what I got, you know? And somewhere along the line, apparently they posted it on the Facebook page.
Yep.
And congratulations to, and you were tagged in a post by, and then I started getting text messages from my co-hosts. Hey, did you know?
But you weren't tagged in a text. It was.
No, I was going to look to see if they had posted it because they said they were going to post Monday, and I was curious to see if any of us would win. So I kept going back to their Facebook page, waiting for them to post it, and then they finally did. And so I put it on your Facebook page, and I texted you. I didn't know if you had seen it.
Yes, I'd seen it.
Yeah, you put on your Facebook page. Oi, did you see you on the Doctor Who grab bag or goodie bag at Vintage
I would hope
Stock?
They would have emailed you, but I wasn't sure.
And I saw that. He hadn't said anything.
They said they were going to post it on Monday. They posted it on Thursday. I don't know how organized they are. That tells me they're not very organized.
They're busy.
So then I saw it, and I thought, wow, Sean hasn't said anything about this. Maybe. What if he doesn't check his Facebook? I'll text him. So
How he is about his Facebook, yeah. too, so I texted him afterwards.
So,
how am I about my Facebook?
You don't always check in.
No, you're right, I don't. Sometimes you avoid it on purpose. Sometimes I'm on it way too much, and sometimes it's like, screw you, Facebook. I'm going off the grid. Speaking of Facebook, briefly, I want to apologize to everybody who follows me on either Twitter or Facebook, because apparently I blew up your stream with, hey, I'm watching The Power of Three again on Doctor Who, and there were like literally 30-some-odd notifications that went out. No, I liked the episode, but I didn't like it that much. I didn't watch it.
Was there a glitch or something?
Well, Git Glue froze up on my iPad, and I pushed the button to say checking in, and nothing happened. So I pushed it again, and again, and you know how it is. And so I did that. And apparently every time I clicked it, even though it hadn't reported to me that it was checking in, it was sending out to the auto feed.
Well, that's odd, because I only got it once via tweet.
Well, I just now deleted them. So
I only got once via tweet, too, but I'll be darned.
So if I blew up your stream, I'm sorry. Anyway, so we went down there. And
I thought of something else I did this week. Sorry. Go ahead.
We went down there, and the guy says, "Oh, great, yeah," and goes into the back room. And waiting. And I was just making the comment when we walked in, it was like, "What are you listening to?" And he's like, "Oh," because it sounded, it was Batman. I recognized Batman theme somewhere. It's like that Dark Knight soundtrack. And he goes, "Well, it isn't. It's a remix that's been put together." You're going to have to put this down.
Yeah, man. Bring it up.
I don't remember the guy's name now. You looked it up just now.
Fatboy
Roberts.
Yes.
And his website is geekremixed.com. And apparently what he does is he pulls, you know, geek soundtrack stuff and then remixes them. And he had this compilation CD, and they're available for free download from his website.
All totally free. There's three of them.
Well, because he doesn't own them. So.
And then two individual songs, one shot.
So they were listening to this in the store, and I'm like, "Oh, that's really awesome." He says, "Well, let me go get your stuff." So he walks into the back, and we're standing there, and the Dark Knight theme ends. And the Doctor Who theme comes on. And I'm like, "Oh, this is like the coolest day ever. I'm going to get free Doctor Who stuff and playing the theme." So he comes out. I'm expecting a goodie bag. You know, a little. No, he comes out with like a brown paper sack full of stuff.
A big shopping bag.
The drawing was over $100 worth of stuff.
We calculated it up. If the suggested retail price on the price tags was any indication, there was at least $120 worth of stuff in this bag.
Wow, nice.
There was the Doctor in My Pocket voice keychain, which Glenn's been playing with. Which I'll never get back from Glenn.
No, I'm taking that
home. There was a plush TARDIS keychain.
Which Katrina loves.
You squeeze and it lights up. And Katrina latched onto that and was kind of like, dibs. So like, okay, I guess you can have that. We've got Doctor Who Monster Invasion magazines, which are apparently, there's a Doctor Who trading card game.
Yep.
Which I haven't opened the cards yet because, as the three of us can attest, we're kind of dangerous with trading card games. But I brought them tonight so you guys can open them and actually...
No, you gotta open them and we'll look at them after you open them.
No, I'm not gonna open them. I trust me, I don't need... I'll open the magazine.
Which, the magazine's pretty cool, I think. I mean, it's kind of a...
You had the best comment about it ever.
It's a Doctor Who insider for kids.
Oh, neat. Hopefully that's a poster and not a page coming.
They do matchups. So, the Minotaur versus the Sycorax, and then you unfold to see who won.
Oh, okay. Apparently, you just spoiled it for me.
Spoilers!
Thanks a lot.
Well, I opened it before I realized what it was. You still can.
Did you open them?
I got Beardy Doctor.
Ooh, Day of the Moon.
Ooh.
Okay, that's enough of that. Take those away from me, because I'll buy 10,000 packs of cards.
Open that one.
Oh, and this magazine has a Where's Waldo?
Yeah, that was surprisingly tough. I still haven't found the Vashta Narada in the white outfit. I found everything else, including the chicken bone.
Foil cyber controller, that's
cool. Ooh! Dibs!
So,
really cool.
What else did we get? We got the...
you got two of these magazines.
These are from Sarah Jane.
Oh.
Three puzzles. There was
For people
Dalek
that don't know what
ball.
I'm looking at, it's the Royal Guard.
There was a Dalek puzzle ball. There was the... Exploding TARDIS as done by Van Gogh puzzle, and there was a Ravensburger, whatever that is.
Well, I think they're both Ravensburgers.
Ravensburgers.
I think all three of them are Ravensburgers. I think they have the license.
They have a license. Well, this one actually has it printed on the card.
So can we play a game?
Oh, Rory Bot. Oh, all right. Worst foil ever. The Doctor's Cot. What? Oh, but I got Commander Strax. That makes up for it.
Oh, very cool.
I wonder if he's a rare.
The last
take these
centurion.
Away from me because I'm going to start buying cards.
Hold on.
Please.
I'm not done looking.
Take some. So we got three puzzles and the TARDIS tin lunchbox.
Which is the best thing in there.
Which is, well, I almost bought that when we were down there.
That's
if
the
I
best
hadn't
thing
spent
in there.
So much money at Con X, I would have bought that since it was 20% off. But yeah, getting that was like, and then...
This card looks like it's cut bad.
The Build Your Own Sonic Kit.
It just...
It is cut bad.
It is cut bad, yeah.
Who cares?
There's a border around the rat. Well,
yeah, you're right. It's a misprint now.
I don't think it is.
You got one like that? Okay, then never mind.
And then I got the Build Your Own Sonic kit, which is one that includes the three different Sonic screwdrivers and the individual pieces, and you mix and match and customize them. And
you should have brought all the swag where we were playing and looking at it.
I haven't got to see the cards yet.
Well, that's why, specifically for you guys, the cards. So I was thrilled. Like I said, $120 worth of Doctor Who stuff. And I promised the guys that we would, he asked what I was going to do with it, and I said, well, honestly, I don't know yet. I imagine some of this is going to be divvied up because obviously Katrina was not giving up the plush TARDIS.
So that was a lost cause. I want Doctor in my pocket. That didn't sound right.
I figured
you
must be upgraded. Oh, Rory
upgrading is compulsory.
I figured there were some other things, but then I thought, well, maybe what we can do is for our upcoming 100th anniversary, maybe we can hold a contest, and we can give back to the community. Ooh, maybe we'll pick an item, and we'll actually give it away.
That's
on the podcast.
That's a good idea. That's an excellent idea.
So, I'm not going to keep all of it. I'm just going to, keep a few things that speak to me. I've already put my Sonic together, though. That one's mine.
And I already opened the Doctor Who in your pocket. So.
Yeah, and Glenn's
I'm tempted to claim that exploding TARDIS puzzle.
Yeah.
I just know how much of a puzzle fan you are,
so
too.
So what we're saying maybe is you'll get you guys get none of this.
That's true.
We've got some magazines for
you. Chrissy, our number one fan, I had this whole bag full of stuff, and I thought I'd give Chrissy something. And my co-host nabbed all of it. So we did that on Friday night and then came back for Friday Night Who and had a very enjoyable Friday Night Who with all of you. And then Saturday did something, and now it's for the life of me, I don't remember.
I know we went.
Oh yeah, we went to dinner.
Watched Who and played Rock Band.
Played dinner and Doctor Who and Rock Band, and we would have let you know.
We played dinner.
Would have let you know, but
played with dinner.
You don't like Rock Band anymore. So. I thought about
tell the guy you're tired of his tweets and suddenly.
I was going to text Glenn. Hey, we're going to play some Rock Band tonight. I bought some new songs, and I thought, oh, I can't do that.
Some pretty enjoyable ones, too.
Speaking of Friday Night Who, this will be the other thing I need to mention. Friday evening, I was off because I worked on the Tough Grip shoot all day, so I was off from my other job. I actually had a chance to join in with the TARDIS Tweets gang, which is another group that does a Friday Night Who type thing. I already typed that one down. It's like Friday Night Who. They pick an episode or a story from classic Doctor Who, and they watch it and tweet along. So I had a lot of fun, guys, and if any of you are listening, keep it up, and I'm going to try to be there next Friday. They do two a week. They do Fridays
and
at 6:15 Central and Sunday, and I don't know what time, but I'll find out for you.
Are the TARDIS tweets, are they U.S.-based?
I'm not entirely sure. I think
just out of curiosity, not that
I think the host is, but the majority of those guys were UK.
I saw Dame Rogers was tweeting along.
Yeah, so and I because I invited everybody over to Friday Night Who and said, I do understand that in 4 hours it'll be very late over there, so, or 6 hours.
Or very early, depending on how you're.
Yeah, exactly. So, but I said if anybody's still up, join in. So.
So we've got, this is awesome, because we've got, obviously, our own Friday Night Who. We've got TARDIS Tweets.
Yep.
We've got
Dr. Who Bar.
Dr. Who Bar USA. Although I haven't seen much from them recently.
No, it kind of dropped off a little bit.
And then, isn't there another one?
Well, we used to have Friday Night Who UK, but they kind of stopped, too.
So multiple opportunities for people to watch Who and tweet along. And it's a lot of fun, and I highly recommend it.
Absolutely. All right, well, guys, let's move on to news. We only have one bit of news this week, and it is very sad.
Yes. Former companion actress Janet Fielding is fighting cancer, they've announced. There's not any details about her condition, but Peter Davidson has won the support of the other ex-Doctor actors to launch a charity fundraising adventure, Project Motormouth, that aims to not only raise money for a good cause, but also keep Janet's spirits up. For those who don't instantly recognize the name, Janet played Tegan. In case you don't know the actors. Davidson, along with Colin Baker, Sylvester McCoy, Paul McGann, and David Tennant, are the first guests announced for the event, which will take place on Saturday the 19th, January 2013, at the Copthorne Hotel, Slough, Windsor. Of course, all guests will be appearing subject to work commitments. But so,
sad news. Myself wishing I lived in England.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's quite a lot up there.
Five, six, seven, eight
Anten.
Yeah.
Sad news, but a great cause to rally the troops around.
Yes.
And of course, a great person to rally the troops around.
And of course, as always, our thoughts, prayers, and meditations go out to her and her family. So,
I hope she's not... I mean, they just announced it, and we don't know anything about her condition. So I hope that she's obviously not in that state of...
Not far advanced.
Yeah. I mean, they're keeping her spirits up, so that kind of... You could go either way with that one.
Sure,
I don't
kind of
worry about that.
I don't think we'll ever know much. I mean, a lot of people like to keep that very close and private.
Well,
so.
Understandably so in some cases. But.
This is interesting. Did you guys know that she worked with three different doctors?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. I didn't know.
I know of two for certain. She was obviously with Peter Davison on the show. She worked with Colin in that special.
I wasn't
the Cybermen special. A Fix with Cybermen? Is that what it was called?
A Fix with the Sontarans.
Sontarans. It was Sontarans.
Yeah, Fix with Sontarans. So four then, actually.
The Peter.
Yeah, Peter Davis. No, not no, Peter. Blue Peter. Blue Peter, yes. Yeah. And she was with Colin in that one.
And then Tom Baker.
She also
represented Tom was her original
Paul McGann.
Yeah, she was an agent.
She was an agent
know if
for Paul McGann. So she wasn't on screen with him, but she worked with
very
him.
Very cool.
She was actually
she got
Paul McGann's agent when he got the Doctor Who gig.
Oh, when very he was cool. On actually, Who you know what? I think they said that in the 7 year
special features. Yeah.
Or whatever it's called. Hitch.
So that's pretty cool, I think.
Cool.
And obviously, if anybody, any of our listeners in the UK do manage to score some tickets to the Project Motormouth convention, we would love updates and a news report from you from there. So.
Absolutely. All right. Well, let's move on to feedback, guys.
Feedback. I'm not going to do the song today. I can't do the song after that.
What? Well, bring us back up, Sean.
Feedback.
I thought you were going to do a like William Shatner doing Rocket Man or something.
No.
All right.
On the list.
First up is Ben. Sent us a message via Facebook saying, "Hello, guys. I enjoy the podcast. Keep up the great work."
Yeah.
Thanks, Ben.
Thank you, Ben.
And as always, remember, if you'd like to make posts on Facebook, we do check those. See?
And messages. Messages via Facebook are acceptable,
absolutely.
Too.
Absolutely.
Our next bit of feedback comes from Mark. It threw me because I'm looking
at
Doctor Who Reincarnated is the email they sent us.
Right.
Yeah,
that's right.
And so I'm used to looking at who it's from and seeing exactly who it's from.
Right.
Which, speaking of which, he says, "Guys, my email is down, so I have to use this one. It's Mark Lee here. I'll tweet you later for confirmation. You don't have to read this heading out, but if you like to, it's up to you. Guys, it's been a while.
Achievement unlocked.
And I have missed you guys. I haven't been able to listen to your podcast over the past couple of weeks because I've been busy with preparing / going to college and work. But I have found some time over the weekend and somehow managed to catch up. I admit my social life suffered because of it, but who needs a social life when you have Doctor Who? I could take a trip
apparently
to the
Amy and Rory.
Spoilers. I could take a trip to the moon, to Mars, make a quick stop about off at Raxic.
Oh, bonus points, Mark.
Raxicorophalopatorius, and see old companions who are long dead, all with the only effort being choosing a DVD. Thinking about it, it's probably best that I do have a social life. I think that if I didn't, by now I'd be dressed as John Pertwee driving around in my Whomobile and telling people how stupid they are. But of course, I don't drive a Whomobile."
I imagine the image in my head is Mark hunched over his computer. His bags are packed for college, and he's typing. And the camera does that cool pan around from the beginning of the computer to the side, and he's wearing a full-blown Third Doctor outfit with the frilly cuffs and the collar, and he types, and then he grabs the laptop and throws it over his head like Stephen J. Cannell used to in the old... that one. Makes the big C in the background.
Yep.
First of all... shouldn't this be seconds?
Random reference there.
First of all,
and we're not even going to tangent it out on that one. You go ahead and look that up.
First of all, I'd just like to say, I've always wanted a good Hooniverse episode set in the Wild West. I've watched the Gunslingers, which I think he means gunfighters, a ton of times, and I'm no longer affected by any negatives in it. I just enjoy seeing the Doctor amongst the Wild West. Whilst I'm on the subject, my favorite third Doctor Who novel... It took me a couple times to read this. My third favorite Doctor Who novel.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. I had the same thing.
Yeah.
Thinking it was a third Doctor novel instead of the third favorite. Which...
Well, he says it that he doesn't no, say it he that doesn't. Way.
No, he says it that way.
He just, says
no,
it that way, but saying. I read it wrong.
Oh, I see. Okay,
because
I
and obviously,
Sean did the
not,
same
not
thing.
Your fault at all, Mark. It's totally a fault on our wiring.
My third favorite Doctor Who novel.
Mark, I'm with it, right?
My first being Resurrection Casket, and the second being The Stone Rose, is set in the Wild West with the 10th Doctor and Martha. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head. And I'm on a train to Liverpool as I'm typing this, so I can't exactly check. Actually, I think the book may have been called Peacemaker. I'm not completely sure, though. I guess any normal person could go back and delete the thoughts about me contemplating the title, but I'm not normal. I like to write in real time. That's why I read his parentheses. So, if you guys find the title for that, I'd really appreciate it. And I hope you forgive my laziness. Smiley face. So my message to Whovians is, fellow Whovians, if you like Westerns, check out the novel called... Anybody? No?
We're going to go with Peacemaker, because I'm pretty sure he's right.
You didn't look it up?
That's
was
why
that with the finger shaking? You didn't look it up?
No, I didn't look it up.
Oh my gosh.
He was just shaking his finger.
Why do we even have a pre-meeting?
Well, this wasn't...
We had a pre-meeting to discuss who was reading what emails, and you wrote it all down, and then as soon as we got to his email, you flipped over to the email, and I can't see your screen anymore, so I don't know if I'm reading this or not.
I forgot that this was in it. It is called Peacemaker.
You guys suck. All right, it's a 10th Doctor novel called Peacemaker, and it stars
Hey, I'm reading
and Martha
it. I can't
Smith.
Google while I read.
It's Martha Smith. It's Martha Jones. Sorry.
That's Martha Smith later.
That's right.
With the 10th Doctor and Martha.
Yes.
So, Peacemaker, you were right.
He just called Mark Peacemaker.
That's Mark's new nickname. Peacemaker, you are right.
Mark Peacemaker McMarmite.
I like it. Anyway, I'm only one stop away from the station, so I'll have to round this up. So this was just a quick update to let you guys know that I'm still alive and a big fan. You're awesome as always, and congratulations to Keith and Sarah. Thank you. I haven't checked out the side trips yet.
People keep congratulating
you. I think you got married or something.
But I'll do that the second I have some free time, which I still can't believe we're on 91 episodes. Feels like only yesterday I was tuning into your first episodes. I'm hoping to be tuning into your 999th episode one day. The constructor is about. To take my ticket.
Constructor? Or the conductor?
He said. He says constructor.
Okay, maybe that's what they're called in the UK.
They must be.
The constructor.
That's another one of those things where reading it in my head, I automatically translated the conductor is about to take my ticket, so I'll have to say goodbye for now.
Constructor.
See, listen to you guys next week. Yours, Travin Lee, Mark Lee McMarmite.
Dude, I want to ride a train in England. Constructors. It just sounds
Did
ominous.
You just say destructors?
No. Constructors.
Oh, okay.
He said
constructors.
I thought I said destructors.
I think about it.
I wouldn't want to ride that train then.
It's like a Michael Bay robot coming at you. Give me your ticket. Okay.
Can you imagine
it makes that punch so much more ominous.
Drunk, big fingers.
Can you imagine us sitting around the table on our 991st podcast?
No.
Somebody cue harp music now, and we'll go into a little fantasy.
Hey, Doctor Who's still on? Back in my day, the Doctor like wore it. A bow tie.
Who's this young kid? He looks like he's all of five. And he's a woman. Yeah. What's with that? That's different. We've got feedback. I can't see the screen anymore.
I would hope by that time we would be beyond laptops. Just jacked into our heads like the Futurama iPhone. Oh, this thing makes phone calls too?
All of a sudden your head starts ringing.
Chris is sending in last minute feedback again.
will be interesting days. Thanks, Mark.
We'll have sticks to hit each other with to really remind what we need to do.
Every time Sean takes a dump, I'm going to get Twitter feed updates. Oh, no. Sean's on the toilet. He's on Twitter now. Sorry.
I'm going to hit you with my cane now.
I'm poking the bear with a stick. I actually have a stick.
Oh, but you know what we could do?
It's that not metaphorical
we'll
anymore.
We'll totally be able to make Back to the Future references because I can pound you on the head and go, hello, hello, McFly.
Next up.
If we're on episode 991, I'd have to think...
Where's my flying car? My jetpack?
Still going to be complaining.
Where's my hoverboard? You're supposed to give us giant robots. Where are they, science? I don't give a crap about the Higgs boson particle anymore. Stop doubting that one. You can ride that coattails
forever. That's so 900 episodes ago.
Yeah, back when they created that black hole, it just sucked Geneva right into the hole.
our tagline for that episode would be, we're on episode 991. Don't make the same life choices.
Hey, what'd you guys do this weekend? I watched. I didn't do anything. I'm still sitting around the nursing home. Well, I got up and I walked across the room and I took my medicines.
Got some Jell-O because I took them all.
Ate some Metamucil because, well, I'm just not regular anymore.
Do we need to formally apologize to old people?
Oh, okay.
It was a big old bear track when we stepped in, isn't it? Yeah.
We haven't gone off the rails that bad in a while.
All right, who's next?
Up next is Alex.
We just sound so disappointed. Oh, my God, Alex. We got to hear from him now.
We haven't heard from him in a while. It's been almost 991 episodes from young Alex.
Alex writes, hey guys, remember me? No, not really.
Who are you?
Who am I?
All right, go.
Okay, I want you guys to watch this. I'm pantomiming this so the people at home can't see this. I'm taking the old man voice and I'm putting him in the box. And I'm throwing him across the room so that he can't come back anymore because we won't get anything done if he comes back again.
Oh, well.
Oh, it's a small black box. It's kind of a cube shape. See if I brought that back around.
That has seven sides.
We can bring it back around.
And where I brought that back around. Hey guys, remember me? It's been quite the long while since I last sent you something in. I think my last feedback was 5 months ago in April. It has been a while.
Wow.
I haven't been keeping track, I'll be honest. It's been a while. Since I'm at long last completely up to date with the podcast again, I felt like it was finally time to write in. First and foremost, belated congratulations to the happy couple. Glenn, did you announce us on Twitter? Keith, I really enjoyed your side trip to Mexico with Sarah, and I wish you both the best for the future.
Thank you very much.
Also...
That wasn't a side trip. That was part of his honeymoon. Oh, he means the side trip he put out. Sorry.
Marriage, the best side trip ever. Also, TARDISes at a wedding. So cool. Is it TARDISes or TARDISes? Not going to go there.
Or is it TARDISi?
Or just TARDI?
It's an acronym.
It's a flock of TARDIS.
So?
A gaggle.
A gaggle. A herd. I like gaggle.
A gaggle of TARDISes.
I've always liked gaggle.
A herd. A swarm.
A school.
What do they call the cats? A group of cats? They said it in an episode of Big Bang, and now I can't remember.
A murder of tortoises. That's cool.
A murder? A murder?
Yeah. Murder of crows.
Yeah.
A murder of tortoises.
It's a murder of crows? For real?
Yeah. You didn't know that?
No.
Traveling the Vortex, educating Glenn since 2000. Clouder.
A clouder of tortoises.
It is a clouder.
A clouder.
A clouder of tortoises. We're claiming it. I imagine technically since they are ships, it would be a fleet. But
yeah.
Moving on.
Wait, why are you hitting me over the head with this board that says tangent? there you go. Now, I'd like to give you a few of my thoughts on the Series 7 episodes, that's my blurb, not his, that we've had up so far. First up, The Asylum of the Daleks. An incredible story, definitely in my top five Matt Smiths, and certainly one of the best scripts Moffat has produced in his run executive producer. Oswin was fantastic. Her appearance whetted my appetite for her return at Christmas. The Daleks were even scarier than I've ever seen them. Not Weeping Angel-level scary, but still very creepy, especially the intensive care Daleks. Matt Smith's performance covered a wide range of emotions, from whimsy to utter terror, and Karen Gillan and Arthur Darvill were both great as always. I felt the breakup between Amy and Rory was a little abrupt, but I enjoyed their reunion enough to let that one little nitpick go. Overall, it was simply superb. As for the Daleks forgetting about the Doctor, I'm sure that soon enough their memories will be restored. But we'll have to wait until the next Dalek story to see what Moffat has planned for them. Dinosaurs on a Spaceship. It's my least favorite of the three we've had. It had all those ingredients for a lighthearted romp, like a ragtag gang of characters, and of course, dinosaurs! But there were just too many little niggling problems that I had with it. The idea that the ship's controls needed two people of the same gene code felt a little too convenient, and seemed to have only been added in to give Brian something to do at the episode's climax. The tone of the episode was also a little too uneven. There was a lot of humor and goofy action, but Solomon's character felt like he had dropped in from a much darker episode. His threats and growls seemed very out of place amid all the Triceratops writing and robot tantrums. I did like Brian, and I'm looking forward to seeing him return, but felt that Riddle and Nefertiti... Was it Riddle?
Yeah.
Or Rydell? It was Riddle.
It was pronounced Rydell.
It was pronounced Rydell, yeah. Pardon me. That Rydell and Nefertiti were very underused and didn't really serve much of a purpose as characters. It was good fun, but it left something to be desired, in my opinion. As for A Town Called Mercy, I looked on the episode a lot more favorably than you guys did. I think this might have something to do with the fact that Westerns aren't as popular a genre in the UK as they are across the pond, so I didn't go into the episode with expectations for a certain type of story. I also felt the tropes of the genre, the horse journey, the showdown, they were done well, and not as cliché as they could have been, but maybe that's just my inexperience with the genre showing. I also wasn't as disappointed with Ben Browder's role in the episode, as I wasn't previously familiar with him. I've yet to watch Farscape, so his early death didn't bother me so much, and I enjoyed what screen time he had as Isaac. One critical point I think you guys missed out on was the similarity between the Doctor and Kallar Jex. Both killed countless numbers of people in war, in an attempt to end the conflict. I think the Doctor sees something of himself in Jex when he compares himself, when the comparison between the two is made. There's rage, like me, guilt, like me, solitude, everything but the nerve to do what needs to be done. And that is the critical point that pushes him over the edge and makes him pull a gun on Jex and throw him out of town. As he says to the Dream Lord in Amy's Choice, "Nobody hates me as much as you do." The Doctor hates himself for what he did to the end of the Time War, and it is the similarity of Jex's crime to his own that makes him act so violently. It's also worth noting that since he's now 1,200 years old, he's been traveling without the Ponds for decades in between adventures, having aged nearly 100 years since the events at Silencio Lake, and so he hasn't had that moral compass of his companions to keep him on the right path. I'll stop now since I'm starting to ramble. But I've been posting reviews on my blog for each episode if you want to hear more of my opinions on the stories. Incidentally, you mentioned that the Doctor doesn't visit the Old West very often. I thought I'd let you know there are a couple of Western stories in other mediums. The Sixth Doctor and Evelyn go west in a similarly named A Town Called Fortune, Big Finish story.
Hmm.
And then there's a Tenth Doctor and Martha book set in the Western town called Peacemaker. Thanks for clearing that up for us, Alex. We were a little confused as to that one.
I wish I would have read this all the way through.
I did. I wasn't going to respond to you, but then Glenn had to go and look it up because I did know it was there. But that's what you get for shaking your finger at me. That's all for me this time around. The Power of Three hasn't aired as of me sending this message, so I'll save my thoughts on that for another time. Until then, it's been great writing into you guys again, and thank you for producing such an excellent podcast. Happy traveling, Alex.
Thank you, Alex.
Thank you, Alex.
Thank you, Alex.
And great to hear from you again. It's
very
been a while.
Much so, yes. And I have some comments on your thoughts, but I think I'm going to hold them for just a little bit.
Okay.
All right. Up next is Brenda.
Brenda writes, Dear Vortex Gang, as much as I have grown to love you guys, I must start with a curse to you for putting that blasted earworm of Ballad of the Last Chance Saloon into my head last week. I'm particularly vulnerable to these things, and I spent the entire past week with a saloon song tinkling in the background and the rousing chorus of So Fill Up Your Glasses and Join In on the Song running as a soundtrack to my days. Arr! Well, on a different note.
Brenda, Brenda, if you liked that, you know, I've got something that I think you're really going to enjoy here. We happened to go outside the studio before we started, and we found this little black box. It's almost cube-shaped. Actually, it's pretty well cube-shaped. And it was sitting outside, and it opened, and we found this.
On a loop.
He closed the door with the soundproof room.
I'm making Sean take that home with him. That was in the goodie bag, too.
Oh, we're having some fun at your expense, Brenda. So there's your soundtrack for the week. She goes on to write, on a different note, kudos to you all for getting the pronunciation of Cymru. Mostly right once I suggested saying Cymru with a British accent. Seriously, it was pretty close. All right. I just wanted to say how much I am dreading the loss of Amy and Rory next week. The Power of Three was such a fun tribute to their relationship with the Doctor, and by extension, with us all, with all of us. I got tearful as the Doctor told Amy how hers was the first face his 11th face saw, and she was seared into his hearts. And when he promised Brian that he would keep them safe, that they wouldn't die like some have, I just shivered. I am so afraid that one or both of them will die, and I don't know that I can handle that. I don't know that the Doctor can handle it either. If we think the Time War damaged him, just imagine how this would destroy him.
I would agree.
Yeah.
On the lighter side, there were some tremendously fun moments in this show. The Doctor's 1 hour of being busy, yard work and vacuuming. Can I persuade him to stay with me for an hour to do the same thing? Fish fingers and custard while watching The Apprentice UK. More Christmas scenes. The trend continues. Is that all you can do? Hover? I had a metal dog that could do that. Always love a canine reference.
Although, isn't that more of a rebooted canine reference than a old school canine reference?
Yeah, because I can't ever remember him hovering.
I don't.
Hover till new canine.
Yeah.
That's okay. It's still a canine reference.
It's still a canine reference, so it's awesome. We'll but take it's still it. Kind of a. Oh, yeah. That's yay!
It. We'll
oh,
take it. The box with the chicken dance on a loop with the Doctor's fingers in his ears. I concur with his taste in music.
Okay, I'm just evil.
I never read this one all the way through. Now I feel bad.
The whole bit with his left heart failure and welcome back Lefty when it restarted. Matt Smith is so great with physical comedy. I totally agree.
He really
I
is.
So enjoyed that. And most of all, Kate Stewart and the loving references to the brig. When that opening credits logo first showed up with the tartan figure, I thought it was a reference to Amy being Scottish. And I think now it was likely a brig tribute. Nice.
Okay, I want to stop there. Tartan figure? The opening credits logo with a tartan figure? Are we talking about the layout, the
think it's the cubic design.
Okay.
The cubic design.
I got the impression because it was just cubes stacked on top of each other more than the tartan.
And I think that's what they were going for.
It looked like a Q-bert playing field.
Yes.
Yeah, it really did.
With all the cubes. But I can agree with her that it did kind of have that because of the strange colorization that they've been using in the Vortex. It kind of had that tartan.
Yeah, but I completely can see now that she brought that. This wasn't my first. That wasn't what I went to first. But now that she's brought
that up, I can totally see it.
That, but I think it was. I think it was a reference to the cubic design.
I want to make a reference to the unit.
Okay.
That was his reference to units.
I can't say that I liked the end. It just seemed to stop rather than resolve. And where was our American TV lady? Can't remember her name. Who was always a staple when the news was breaking worldwide in the RTD years. I thought the exact same thing.
Yeah.
I thought we're going to see that gal. She was all over she was like
she must have
the American news anchor, and then we didn't see her. So.
She must have gone to a different network.
Maybe so. That would have been a nice tie-in. Oh, well, missed opportunity and all that. Hope you all have a great week. I'm stocking up on tissues for Saturday night and preparing to be depressed for a while. Since I didn't come to Doctor Who until the last three episodes of 10's run, and then caught up in retrospect, this will be the first time that I have to say goodbye to characters after spending years growing to love them. Keith, you and I can commiserate next week, I'm sure.
Yes, we will.
Brenda in Atlanta. Thank you, Brenda.
Thank you, Brenda.
Nice.
It's great hearing from you.
Enjoy your gift.
Are you going to box that cube up and mail it to her?
Yes.
Brenda, we need your address.
If you too would like a chicken dance cube, we're having them manufactured.
Well, sorry, there's only one.
Traveling the Vortex logo on the back. But
you know, BBC UK, I think, provided Cubicraft cubes that you could print off.
No!
Yeah, it has threes on all of them.
Oh!
So
well,
we need to figure out how the... or just go and bunch a buy of the Hallmark cards. That's a chicken dance.
Just
and
take
put it in there.
So doing that.
With our logo on it. There we go.
Awesome.
Robert at work showed me that on Friday, actually. Anyways, going on. Next up is Phil. On Duck Phil, to be precise. Comment question. Hey, who Peekins? Running behind. I haven't watched the latest episode yet. But if all goes well, I can get this initial feedback hammered out, watch it, then fire off my thoughts before showtime.
Okay.
If not, you'll have it for next week's show. Glenn, I was having an absolute blast listening to you reminisce about the Old West and Westerns. I think Silverado is one of the better starter Westerns given the cast and homage feel to it. I honestly think my three favorite Westerns are, in no particular order, Silverado,
good one,
Unforgiven,
very good one,
and For a Few Dollars More.
Excellent one.
And
I just ordered them for you.
I think Blackened Out at the Wheel.
I think
I blackened out at the wheel when you mentioned the Justice League of America pilot. It was like 1,000 voices cried out and then threw up.
Yep.
Keith, it's never fun to hear someone slight your doctor, especially if the slight is unjustified. However, it's also in bad taste to throw someone else's favorite doctor under the dust, so please leave Tennant alone.
Aha.
Is this about the Sonic stuff?
Yep. This is about the Sonic stuff.
Definitely about the Sonic.
I'm not throwing Tennant under the bus. I'm saying...
Just a minute.
It's
just
a trend that started and...
You totally threw him under the bus.
I did not intend to. I'm just saying Matt Smith's not the only one.
Phil called me tonight. And I'm like, okay, dude, I read your first email. He says, did you get my email? I said, well, I got the first one. I haven't seen the second one yet. He says, yeah, I'm still working on that. And I said, okay. I got to ask, what was up with the Keith reference? Because... Obviously, it's an email, so we can't get the tonal inflections or anything. As well as talk about the Sonics. I was like, okay, because you didn't put that in there. I wanted to make sure that you weren't really mad at him. He says, no, because Glenn was like, oh, the Sonic is being used too much. And then Keith's like, well, they started that in David Tennant's era. And I thought about this after he said that, and you did it again tonight. You were talking about Renfest, and I was like, well, there was a Doctor Who wedding, and there was a TARDIS, and there was this... This guy was dressed as like the 10th Doctor.
I wasn't there.
You totally. Like,
the guy was dressed as 10.
And there were weeping angels. And some guy dressed as 10.
If anything, I was the woman dressed as the Renaissance, who was kind of whatever. 10 and a wedding and awesome.
Listen. It's okay. Phil, he's going to have his list here tonight of all tonight? Of the times that no. David Tennant has.
That's 2 weeks from now.
What?
When we do the Sonic episode.
Oh, so you need more time because no. you're not finding them.
No, I need more time because I haven't looked yet.
All right. Go on.
3. Town Called Mercy 2.0 and Dark Doctor Clarification. I really liked it, but I wouldn't say I loved it. And though... two of you rated it as your least favorite episode of the Series 7. You still enjoyed it.
Yep.
That said, I feel this episode needs some defending, or at least, at the very least, some counter-arguments. First of all, Jex, an alien doctor who devoted his life to healing and fixing things. He finds his species embroiled in a war that could spell genocides for his people. And to save his society, he forsakes his vows and creates a monstrous, terrible things to win the war. We've never really found out what the Doctor did during the Time War. How far was he pushed before he said no more? Did he have a hand in the Nightmare Child or the Horde of Travesties? Did he want to see Jax punished because deep down he feels a strong sense of remorse for his own actions in the Time War, actions that no amount of doctoring will atone for? And dark isn't the right word. I think, really, I've only seen the Doctor go dark 2 or 3 times. 10's dealings with the Family of Blood.
Yes.
And the Waters of Mars.
Yes.
And maybe 9's reaction to the Dalek in Dalek.
I've got one more for you. Yeah. When he's dealing with the spider lady in the sewers in Runaway Bride.
I would agree.
That's another moment where he went really dark.
That's another dark
sorry, go ahead.
I think we were referencing to dark for 11 more than anything else, because that's the darkest we've seen 11
go. Well, let me speak to something real quick, and I think that Sean is wanting to talk about this as well. I feel a little remiss that we didn't talk about the parallels that they were creating last week between the two. I tried to bring that up, and I was going to go somewhere with it, but I think my mind just derailed at the station, my train of thought. Anyway.
All aboard the fail train.
Yeah, so... I saw glimmers of that. That's where they were going with it. My problem with that is obviously two people have now so far mentioned it in feedback. So they got that out of that. And I did too.
Yeah.
But I didn't
feel
I think
all three of us did.
Yes, but I don't think they pressed it well enough. And I don't think it justified anything that the Doctor was doing other than it was feeding the conflict. I agree with both of you guys that might have been his reason for his final throwing him out, pulling the gun. Yes, I think that's absolutely right. I think it was Jax was questioning him, and the Doctor was showing that he could go through with it, that he wasn't any different. On the flip side, I just don't think that in that moment they didn't press it home well enough for me.
It still felt like there was an adventure that made him darker beforehand.
Yeah, you guys said that. I don't know, but anyway, we already reviewed that one.
Apparently. According to our feedbackers, not well enough, because there are a lot of subjects we didn't touch on. The near lobotomy of the space whale, the blowing up of Solomon, and the attempt to turn over Jex are all something in common, I think. But dark probably isn't the right word. What I have seen of the Doctor, new series only, shows someone who is unwilling to sacrifice a pawn. If given the choice of letting one die to save billions, who will fight tooth and nail until he finds a way to save them all. Even villains and monsters he seems unwilling to strike down. It seems like most of the foes who die at his hand are tricked into a situation where they die by their own actions. And usually the Doctor gives them one last chance to walk away. But sometimes he gives up. And while I would not shed a tear for Solomon... given all he did, the Doctor killing him felt out of place. He gave up on him. And when it came time to decide whether he should free the space whale from its torments and thus doom the passengers or save them and spare it further pain by lobotomizing it, how much time did he really spend finding the patented doctor's third option? He quits, and it was up to Amy to find that option for him. Dark isn't the right word, but given the doctor's general attitude and tenacity, it is a truly dark time for time and space when he gives up. Okay, that's it for now. Looking forward to finding out if any of this rambling made sense. Odd Duck Phil. P.S. Looking back at A Town Called Mercy, there's one glaring omission I didn't catch the first time. The Doctor Who theme should have been done by guitar and harmonica, with an occasional bullwhip crack. That would have been awesome.
That would have been pretty cool, actually.
You know what's funny, Phil, is after he mentioned this when we talked on the phone, and I said, surely there's one out there. There's got to be something. Did a quick search. Murray Gold, the show's musical director-composer, apparently posted a video to his YouTube channel featuring this. when it's not muted. There we go. Ready?
That is awesome.
Very cool.
We'll post a link.
That is.
I can't tell if it's actually Murray Gold playing or not.
It looks like him.
It kind of looks like him, so I think it is.
Phil sent back in some feedback saying, comment, question, comment, speaking of overuse of the sonic screwdriver. I liked what this episode was really about, the heart of the relationship between the Doctor and the Pawns. I found the cubes interesting, but was a bit let down by the payoff. I found myself watching the time wondering if this was somehow going to be a two-parter that led into the Angels. I mean, how are they going to all wrap this up in 5 minutes? Oh, right, the sonic screwdriver. Job well done, then, I guess. Glad that Rory's dad made it into another episode. I had some great scenes with the Doctor. I thought he had some great scenes with the Doctor, I thought. And I tip my hat to the new head of unit. Nice fandom salute there, Moffat. Odd Duckville. P.S. So what was the official screwdriver tally in this episode? Am I exaggerating if I put it at 5?
No. But more on that later.
All right.
Thanks for writing in, Phil.
Absolutely.
Next up is Chrissy.
Chrissy, Sean,
this is clockwise.
Is that what we're doing?
Yeah, clockwise.
This is how we've done it for the entire time of the show, almost.
But you keep pantomiming the question. Is this me?
Is this me?
Am I reading this one?
And I keep pointing at you regardless.
But you've been pointing at me all night. But it hasn't meant anything.
That's apparently true. Not, when we point at you,
we're
you
not
don't
on the same wavelength.
Chrissy writes, Dear Vortex Boys, that was the longest, hardest slog through a Traveling the Vortex podcast I have ever endured. I know you said you didn't think A Town Called Mercy was as bad as something like Fear Her, but I have never heard all three of you being so negative on a story before. That includes the great exaggerated caricature war of 2011.
Wow, I really feel like
we gave the really wrong impression.
A bad rap last week when we all enjoyed it.
Phil got that. Doug Phil got that out of it.
Several times I think you mentioned that you liked it well enough, but I'm not convinced. Honestly, what would your review have been sounding like if you hate it? Glenn, I love that you are so adamant that Isaac is only in A Town Called Mercy for 15 minutes, because he actually gets shot at the 24th.
I knew somebody was going to go
I was hoping
that
somebody
up.
Would.
And he dies at 25:38, a full 10 minutes after you thought he died. He's in the episode for over half the time.
I watched it again this week, and I went back and I thought, why did I get 15? It's actually 25. I must have just looked at a 5.
I have the counter. I downloaded the episode on iTunes. I have the counter. Don't argue with me.
No, I rewatched it, and I went, yeah, I was off by about 10 minutes.
I have to comment on something that's happening with fandom this season that I find funny, but a little sad as well. Going into this season, we were told that these were all going to be standalone stories. No two-parters, no story arcs. But through all of these episodes, nearly every review I've read or listened to has said something to the effect of, if this was a two-parter, it would have been better because it had been able to put more in.
Did we do that? Because I don't know. I haven't thought that.
I've said it several times.
Sean. Way to put us in line with the rest of the reviewers. Yeah.
I didn't say it with Asylum of the Daleks. I thought it. Not necessarily with dinosaurs. I definitely felt it with the Western.
Did you say it on the podcast?
I think I may have said it on during the Western.
All right.
Chrissy will let us know. Well, we were promised no two-parters, and we've had standalone stories in the past that worked out just fine, so I don't know what all the fuss is about. Besides, if you expand a story too much, you end up with the Rebel Flesh and the Almost People.
Amen.
And I think we know how well that worked out. In case that doesn't translate, I'm being sarcastic. Chrissy,
Amen.
I think there are several two-parters.
I haven't thought any of these that needed to be more than
I agree.
One part.
I'm going to say it. Yes, I think there are. But I think
which one and why? Because well, I don't. I'm not getting that.
A Town Called Mercy not necessarily needed the two-parter. I definitely think Power of Three could have used it.
I think Power of Three was torn in general.
Well,
I don't think a two-parter would have fixed it.
I think it might have. But here's the deal, and I want to make sure that we're going to go on record.
We're going to talk about this later.
We're going to talk about that later. But I want to go on record as far as Town Called Mercy goes. I liked the episode.
I did too.
So did I.
I liked the episode. I'm not backpedaling
here.
I'm not going back on everybody saying, "Oh my God, they got so much hate feedback this week." Because that's not. We appreciate when you guys call us out on stuff.
Yes.
I really, really liked Town Called
Mercy. We were negative Nellies last week for some reason.
Apparently, it came across that way, and I don't mean to. Was it my least favorite episode of the series so far? Yes, it was. But that in no way diminishes my enjoyment of it. I'm just saying that I enjoyed the other two episodes more than this one. And I don't even think I said that. I think maybe you said that this was your least favorite.
Because it definitely was my least favorite.
I think I liked this one better than Dinosaurs on
the
Spaceship.
You said that, yeah. So,
I mean, when we say
that... You must have said it was your least favorite, because two of us did say it. Phil even said that.
Yeah, I thought two of us did.
I don't remember saying it was my least favorite, because I haven't... I, in my mind, really haven't ranked any of the episodes. They're all kind of even for me.
I'm a fan of you. Go away.
So I
think all of them have great points, and all of them have great plot issues.
Well, I mean, we can do that with any Who.
Okay, yeah, Charlie Brown, way to be wishy-washy.
If we really want to nitpick, I can go back to some of my favorite episodes and really, really nitpick things that just don't make sense in them. But it still means I love the episode.
They've all been really enjoyable this season. That's why I'm not ranking any of them. They've all been a lot of fun.
Here's what happened is I came to this episode, that last week's episode, with way too many high expectations. being such a Western fan. And I think I talked you guys down on a lot of things that I think you guys agreed with me and made it sound like the conversation. I think I did. And I think that you guys tended to fall in line with some of the things I was saying. You didn't fight me like you normally do. And so I think it sounds like we all came down on this episode. When you guys were still being champions of this episode, more so than I was.
I think, to be fair, the points you brought up during the podcast were valid points that we were like, yeah, okay.
And most of your comments about it were in relation to the Western
See, that's the problem with our review of it last week. We focused so much on the Western theme.
We didn't focus on the actual story.
I think my biggest issue
with the was the confrontation with Jex and how I felt like they didn't go far enough with it. I think that was the majority of my down on it. I did want it to feel more Western-y and all that stuff, but it didn't. It was Cowboys and Aliens. It was just sci-fi in the Old West. It was Jonah Hex.
Firefly is not science fiction
in the Old West because it uses an Old West feel, but it's not
Western.
It's not a Western.
There's nothing wrong with sci-fi in the Old West.
Yes.
We just thought we were getting a Western.
Right. I wanted more I wanted more.
That does
more
create a different problem because I loved Cowboys and Aliens. I love Firefly. I love all these things that are the mashing of these two genres. And I loved this.
I wish you would quit placing Firefly as a Western. It is not a Western. It is built to feel like a Western, but it is not a Western.
They smuggled cattle.
It is not a Western, though.
It's a space Western.
It's a space Western.
It's a
Western.
It's a space Western. It's not an Old West.
No, it's not a Western.
You can have a Western without being Old West.
It is a sci-fi movie with that peppers in Western tropes. That's what it is. It is a sci-fi. It's a science fiction show.
Yeah, why sci-fi becomes first.
It is as much Old West, or it's as much Western as Star Wars is Lawrence of Arabia because it's set in the desert on Tatooine. I mean, that's what I'm saying. So anyway, sorry. I'm getting off on a tangent here. But anyway, yes, we did all like this story. We did all like this story, but...
No, yeah, I want to make sure that nobody gets the wrong impression from us, because I agree. I think we focus way too much on the Western, that tripped us up, and once, you know how we are, we tangent. Once we got tripped up on that, we stayed with it, and we whipped that horse until it was dead. And
okay.
And kind of went, oh, wow, we're 2 hours and 40 minutes into this, and what'd you think of the rest of the story?
Yep.
Good. I didn't like this part. Everything else was awesome. I mean, there were things that they did that were phenomenal. And then there were things that they did that I don't think that we quite agree with. And this is one of those things. I don't think this needed to be a two-parter, but I don't think any of us would have complained if it had expanded on the role of Jex a little bit and given us a little bit more of that motivation, a little bit more of that comparison of the Doctor and him being shadow figures of each other. And
maybe tried to be a Western less and focus on that more.
I don't know. I'm not saying that's how I would... I'm not saying that it needs fixing. I'm not saying that would have fixed it. I'm just saying that I don't think any of us would have complained if they had chosen to explore that a little bit.
Yeah, I agree.
So,
I agree.
Does it need a second part to it? No, it doesn't. Tonight's episode, which we will get to eventually, I think would have benefited
that's
from
too
that,
bad.
But I will explain that.
That is too bad.
So there's that. And, you know, and this for Chrissy and everybody who wrote in and went, "Ah!" We agree. It's not that we don't. Yes, Glenn kind of hijacked the podcast last week and took us in a dark place. But, you know, we're not going to go there this week.
So. I went darker than the Doctor did in that last episode.
Yeah, I don't think you went. you were a little... You had your toe in the lake, but I don't think you were...
No,
you weren't as dark as you were in the great caricature work 2000.
No,
that's for sure.
So. I wasn't as vehement about that.
Chrissy goes on. Battlefield. At first, I didn't think I'd like this story. By the time it was over, I loved it. Mixing up King Arthur's knights and modern for the 80s military forces was just a lot of fun. And the Brigadier's back. And we meet Mrs. Brigadier. Doris, I believe her name was. Sometimes when Doctor Who brings companions back from the Doctor's past, they present the present companion kind of gets shoved to the side. But I loved the fact that Ace had plenty to do. Probably good that they gave her a new friend to team up with while the Doctor was catching up with the Brig. I thought the whole thing fit together really well and was just an enjoyable way to spend 2 hours. And props to Sean for thinking of watching this story this week, considering how the unit stuff dovetails nicely into the Power of Three. Chrissy, I am glad that my planning paid off so magnificently for tonight's episode. Because I
can I take some credit for this?
No.
All right. I was the one that recommended this story because I found it was a unit story.
We were debating back and forth on a couple of different ones because we didn't want to do another Pertwee,
yes.
Which is where we thought we were going to go. Right. And then you said, "Well, isn't there?" And you said, "Hey, Battlefield, that's a Doctor story that the unit's in." And we went, "Oh yeah, that's cool." So
now the
I get credit for scheduling it, but it was really
the Briggs stuff is complete serendipity.
Yeah,
yeah, well, that turned out.
Yeah.
So, the Power of Three. My initial reaction was that I loved this story. But given how many people are still whining and complaining, I will tamper down my review and say that I liked this story very, 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 very much. If you want my full-on fangirl, "Oh my god, I love this story!" review, go to my blog. I thought it moved along at the right pace. It wasn't too fast, so the mystery behind the cubes could have some good suspense behind it, but also wasn't too slow that I got bored. I think the main theme of this story is the relationship between the Doctor and the Pons and how Amy and Rory feel about living their normal lives in between Doctor lives.
Look, Chrissy just gave my review.
I loved how the Doctor stays with the Pons and has to adjust to life in their world. It's been a long time since we've had anything take place on modern-day Earth, isn't it? And it's almost a reversal of what we've had this season. We follow the Ponds for a year and watch the Doctor pop in and out of their lives instead of following the Doctor and getting clues that the Ponds haven't been with him continuously.
Oh, look, Chrissy just gave my final thoughts.
I almost feel like the cubes were just an excuse to get the Doctor to come back and have an adventure with Amy and Rory in their world. But I'm okay with that. I'm even more okay with the resolution of the cubes, finding out which wacky alien is sending them. Only takes about 5 minutes at the end. By the time they get around to facing down the Shakri, I really don't care who it is that's sending these things. I only want Team TARDIS to beat them and go on with their adventures. I'm more interested in how they're building up for the Pawn's departure, and I'm not terribly concerned over how quickly the Shakri are dispatched at the end. Although, did anyone else think that guy looked like Emperor Palpatine?
Can I interrupt? No.
What?
Vader without his helmet.
Okay, yeah, I'll give you that.
He looked like a meld between the Emperor and Vader without his helmet.
He looked like Vader without his helmet plus 15 years.
When I first saw him in the room, I thought it was Emperor Palpatine. That was where my mind went. But then when we get the close-up and he's got the things and the face, it was like, that looks totally like Vader, especially on the second watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On the second watch, I only saw Vader.
Where were we? I will admit that it's strange that they leave these people behind to be blown up with the ship. That's something that Phil pointed out earlier.
Good, I'm not the only one.
Okay, well, we'll get to that then. But I don't think the Doctor realized that by reversing the cube's electronic signal, the ship would self-destruct, and by the time he figured it out, there was only time enough to get himself and the Pawns out of there. I'm a little bit okay with it. Not much, but a little.
Oh, wait. I want to touch on it, because I don't blame the Doctor. Maybe a little bit, because he didn't make it clear enough to Amy and Rory. He told Amy and Rory to get them out of there. Apparently, Amy and Rory only thought that meant Brian and the rest of the people there. Any other companions, for whatever reason, would try to get the rest out. I don't know why Amy and Rory didn't. They should know better.
I still think they did.
Because,
you think
so?
Because
they were bodies behind them in the scenes. Right? As it was exploding. Right? As, oh crap, we got to escape. There was at least one body.
Because they didn't catch up to him immediately, and then he turns around like, what are you doing?
I
told you to get
that's what I thought they were doing until I saw the bodies in the back.
We're going to review this here in about 10 minutes. So. Yeah. Move on.
Okay.
30 minutes, I guess. I was giving Battlefield a short shaft.
Of course. I have to mention UNIT here. There was one moment during the Tower of London scene where I saw the UNIT logo and I thought, it's sad the Brigadier isn't here anymore. And then about a minute later, we get the revelation that Kate Stewart is the Brigadier's daughter. I really, really, really loved that part. She was really great. Even more so that she got to her position in UNIT by her own merits and not necessarily by her dad or by who her dad was, though I'm sure it didn't hurt. It was just a nice nod to the past. And all that stuff under the Tower of London reminded me of the Third Doctor fiddling around in a UNIT lab while soldiers waited for instructions of how to bring down his latest threat to humanity. It was just wonderful. There were a lot of little nods to the past in this story. K-9 got a mention as well to what happens to former companions. I've heard other people suggest that these little nuggets of Doctor Who history throw off new viewers. But I don't think that's the case at all. I think new viewers understand that Doctor Who's been around for such a long time, and they know that the writers like to throw in these little tributes to the past. I think it's just fine.
I think it would only throw off new viewers if they weren't aware of the long history, for whatever reason.
Patrick turned to me during the show, and he says, so is that the Briggs daughter? And I said, yeah. He says, okay. And he was right on with it. So,
he's never
seen an old episode, so he was obviously patching it up with this phone call.
Yeah.
Matt made. Things are subtle enough, and they've built it over the last 7 years. That
unfortunately, okay. There are some fans who haven't seen Old Who and don't recognize
I just don't think they have to. I think they've built enough of the hints in there over the last 7 years that we've been okay with it.
I could blather on about how much I enjoyed The Power of Three. It's my new favorite of the season. I still like A Town Called Mercy, but this one has it beat for now. But I have my own blog where I can do that, so I will close up and let you get on with your reviews. Chrissy. And as always, Chrissy, thank you. And yes, she wrote a wonderful piece on it for her blog, which I highly recommend. If anybody's interested, go check it out.
Well, I'll go read it because she'll praise the episode as much as I will. So,
our last bit of feedback comes from Holly.
Holly writes, "Hey guys, Battlefield. I really enjoyed the story. The Brig coming out of retirement to help with what's going on. The Doctor getting jailed by UNIT yet again. Ace and her love of using explosives. I was cracking up at the Doctor's line about safety precautions after Ace used the bomb to open up the dig hole with a marker at the here marker, hole here marker at the dig site. Yes. everyone from both sides that came to Earth thinking the Doctor was Merlin was very interesting, and I could buy it. Winifred and Anselin made quite the team. It was cool to see Bessie again, and with the Doctor's jiggery pokery, I guess she can go up to 88 miles per hour. I think the Brig and the Doctor might be in for a little trouble when the ladies get back from their trip, or vice versa. The Power of Three. Great episode. I'm glad that they brought Brian back. I was cracking up at the Doctor when he decides to stay and all the housework and soccer playing that he does. And when he's finished, he asks Amy how long it took. And his reaction when she said it was just an hour was priceless. Unit shows up, guns at the ready. I was almost expecting the Doctor to get arrested, but no. We get Kate Lethbridge-Stewart, the Brig's daughter. She reminds me quite a bit of her dad. I really do hope they bring her back. I was a little worried when Brian had his conversation with the Doctor about the previous companions that Brian would tell the Doctor to leave Amy and Rory alone. I was happy at the end when Brian told Amy and Rory to go ahead and travel with the Doctor. I think he realized after his brief time traveling with him that once you do anything else, it kind of pales in comparison. Looking forward to hearing your thoughts on this episode. Holly from Wisconsin.
As always, great to hear from you.
And I'm afraid you'll have to wait just a little bit, because we're going to review
Battlefield! Responding to a distress signal, the Doctor and Ace arrive near the village of Carberry, where the nuclear missile convoy has run into difficulties. The peace of the English countryside is shattered as unit troops are besieged by armed knights from another dimension. As the crisis deepens, Brigadier Lethbridge-Stewart is called out of retirement to join the battle. Together, he and the Doctor must face the Destroyer, a fearsome demon summoned by the witch Queen Morgaine to devour the world. Dun, dun, dun.
You didn't like it that much. No, I did.
No, I'm... Honestly, my expression is debating of trying to think of a seventh Doctor story I liked better.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Cool. And I think a lot...
Silver Nemesis, because it had Cybermen in it.
Well, okay, that's pretty close. But Cybermen and the Brig, oh, that's a tough call.
That's a tough call.
And it had a very Silver Nemesis feel to it, story-wise. Really.
Quite frankly, you remember back, I don't know... 80 episodes ago or so, when we were talking about after Nicholas Courtney had passed away and we were recalling our favorite episodes, I completely had said Silver Nemesis when I was talking about this story.
Oh, this was the story you were talking about.
Because for some reason I get both of those stories mixed up in my head.
The plots.
When I haven't seen them for a while. It's because of the woman that comes, the strong female character that comes, and there's... center of power, which in this one particular one's the shield, and that particular one it's the silver thing, whatever it was called. You know, it's so
the nemesis.
Exactly, yeah, the silver, yeah, that's right, the silver nemesis. So I always get these two melted together in my head, and so I had misspoke and said that was my favorite Brig
because he obviously wasn't in it.
This is my favorite Brig episode right here.
Oh, the Brig is so wonderful in this, and really, him and McCoy's portrayal of the Doctor make this story. They are so wonderful together, and I wish there were more. And the fact of... They don't hide the fact that the Brig is coming. He's there before the Doctor, even. And then gets called out of retirement. And all of that is so wonderful. And it's kind of sad that that's the last... This is the last story we see of the Brig on Doctor Who.
Yeah. No.
On Doctor Who proper, it is.
He's in Dimensions in Time.
What? I don't count that. And didn't that come before? Was that after this?
It was after this.
It was made after this.
I don't count that still.
I agree with you by saying it's the last appearance of the Brig in Doctor Who proper.
It was in Dimensions of Time.
That's not proper.
Why is it not proper?
The same as Curse of Fatal Death is improper.
Because it was a special.
No, Curse of... Okay, so Pond Life isn't proper. No. So neither is space and time, because that was a comedy.
You're arguing the wrong people. I think all of it is continuity. I'm just saying Doctor Who proper, that it was not
proper
televised as Doctor Who.
So you're saying that Dimensions of Time is continuity. It's just not proper.
Yeah.
I got him to say it. That's all I needed.
We've said all said continuity. We've always said that all Doctor Who is continuity.
You like to pretend it doesn't exist.
I do not treat Dimensions of Time.
No, because the comic relief special for Curse of Fatal Death is not continuity.
Well,
it's not.
That's the one exception.
Even though there is a book that tried to.
Not yet. You haven't fixed it.
Yeah.
That's not the one I'm fixing. I'm kidding. Screaming Shocker. But
you should fix that too.
Shocker. Not the Shockery.
Shocker. Yeah. Different. I'm not even going to go there.
All right.
I liked all the characters in this. You disliked the characters you were supposed to dislike.
Like Mordred.
Morgaine. And her.
She always reminded me of Rogaine.
No, Mordred, the son.
Mordred, you disliked.
I disliked Mordred.
You liked, as we call them, Thor, because Mordred was Loki. You liked him and his. And you didn't like the new Brig for a while. And then you started to like her. Not because she's the new Brig, just as her own character. You still don't like that she was a replacement. But she, once she started flirting with Thor, it was almost more, she was a more enjoyable character. The ideas behind this story, I think, are fantastic. They're trying to tie in King Arthur and that it's actually all alternate universe, I think is great. And honestly, for me, I like to think of myself as decently educated on Arthur. But it wasn't until they were at the lake and at the dig site where he explained this is where the Lady of the Lake would have been that it all clicked in my head of, oh, that's what's going on here. Okay. So that's when I understood it and had no problems with the rest of the story. The first part before that, I was confused.
I think it's intentionally set up to do that. I think it's intentionally set up to drop these little hints to kind of piece together when the things that are very familiar go, oh, that's okay, this is why this has been said. So, yeah.
And honestly, my knowledge of Arthur isn't as extensive as it could be. I mean, honestly, from what I know of Arthur is from movie versions. I mean, the television version of Merlin with Sam Neill, those kind of things. I really liked the Destroyer and his look. I tweeted it out and I will still stand by it. It looked very Buffy or Angel. And even ahead of its time for Buffy and Angel. So I think the mask, despite your issues with the mouth.
That's my only problem with it. I think even then,
the mouth wasn't as bad as it could have been.
I made some fun, but back in the day, you couldn't get the articulation out of mouth. I mean, even the Muppets in the Return of the Jedi don't articulate their mouths. They lip sync a little better, but
even 10 years later, when Buffy starts, they don't articulate their mouths that well. I mean, that's just part of the masks, and this mask was fantastic. Mel mentioned that it looked like a Grask.
Yeah, I didn't get that. I didn't get
but
that.
But she was actually thinking of a Grosk. Thanks to one of the magazines that Sean got. Where is it? Hold on. Let me find it. That's the wrong one. A Grosk is apparently a blue Grask,
yeah,
but it's good.
Yeah, it's coming up. You'll see it in the. I think that's in Death of the Doctor that we see a Grask.
I don't know.
Did you just say zoom zoom?
I said, is it?
Oh, okay. There was candy in your mouth.
Zoom zoom,
zoom zoom.
Yeah. I didn't think it looked like a Grask at all.
I didn't think it looked like a Grask either. But
the mask was phenomenal.
The match was good. I wouldn't say phenomenal, but it was really, really good.
I know you were complaining about this motion.
For 1980s Doctor Who?
I was really giving you guys a hard time because you were gushing over this mask.
Because it's not what we're used to.
It's intricate. It's very, very
For Doctor Who in this time frame.
The way, Destroyer kind of had a Muppet mouth where it just blah, 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 blah. But there was articulation around the ridges here and the eyebrows, which were really impressive. The ridges in the face and everything else moved. I don't mind this because I'm used to this. Mm-hmm. The fact that you added all the rest of it is like, wow, that's cool.
Mm-hmm. It was good as the mouth movements in Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
Having gone back and rewatching
which
those.
Which was done in the time of William Hartnell.
I know.
And Patrick Troughton, but...
So, and that's a big budget movie.
No, I would
this
disagree. I think the leopard people in Survival, I thought the makeup was incredible.
I think we wowed over them, too.
We did wow over them.
That's what I'm saying, though. You guys are saying, we don't use that, Doctor Who. That's very near this.
That's
what I'm saying. Late McCoy era. Actually, the stories got better towards the end, but... The stories weren't all that great in McCoy era, but the costuming was getting much better. I mean, it was the special effects were getting much better, in my opinion. Of course, we were getting computer generated effects at that point as well. So,
well, and we're saying it was phenomenal based off the fact of also this is post Mirka,
yeah. But several years after Mirka.
Yeah, quite a few years after Mirka.
So. That's the thing is that it's easy to pick on production.
Once you've hit the low.
It's easy to pick on production value, and for every invasion of the dinosaurs or the Silurians with the fake dinosaur-looking things or the Mirka, it's nice to come back and get a Cheetah People or a
Destroyer
that just goes, wow, look at that.
But you also have to put yourself in perspective that this is late 80s, not mid to early 80s.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
We've seen all the really shoddy stuff. So.
Well, this is 89. It's almost 90.
That's what I'm saying. It's late 80s. This was stuff was getting better at this point. Makeup artists were
better. This was the same year Batman
prosthetics came out.
What month did it come out?
Batman was, it was the kickoff. It was May, wasn't it?
So this is after.
I want to say it was June, but.
This came out after.
No, it wasn't May.
Batman. Because this is September. All of this was September 6th through the 27th.
Yeah, but you're comparing apples and oranges again, guys. You got a movie budget compared to a TV budget.
I was just trying to throw out that benchmark of where you were at.
Oh, okay.
I didn't say this was the same year as Star Trek V. I could have.
That would not have made it any better.
I would have got that reaction.
This mask is better than Star Trek V. I'll give you that.
yes, it is.
But regardless, I thought there was little to not like about this story. And of the McCoys, this is one I would definitely own. And from what I've seen of the McCoys, there's not many I would own. No offense to McCoy, but there's a lot of Baker, there's a lot of Davidson I wouldn't own either, and a lot of Tom Baker. I'm not a...
That's because you're weird.
So far, with classic Doctor Who, I'm not a completist like you guys are.
That's because we're saving the good stuff for later. I agree. This was not one that I'd seen in its entirety. I'd seen bits and pieces of it. I think I'd seen all of the first episode. And then just kind of bits of it throughout that point. And it was kind of always one of those that I was very curious about because I have a fascination with Arthurian legend and Merlin. And anytime a television show does it, it's always, ooh, cool, we're doing the Merlin episode, you know, and Stargate SG-1's done it. I mean, it's a trope anymore.
It surprises me you haven't watched Merlin.
With Sam Neill?
No.
He's talking about the television
with
series.
With Anthony Stewart. The Smallville.
I haven't seen either one of them.
Arthur.
Yeah, I haven't seen either one of them. It's on my list. I just haven't yet.
Wait. You haven't seen the NBC's...
No, I haven't seen the NBC. I've seen pieces of it. I've not seen it. I watched it in the store, so it doesn't really count because it was on, but you couldn't pay attention to it.
They apparently made a sequel to it, too.
Yeah, Merlin's Apprentice, and Mel owns both of them. And Sam Neill's in it. But...
what else is he doing?
Well, he was on Alcatraz.
Look how long that lasted.
Hey, as Keith will point out, he owns a big budget J.J. Abrams produced television show.
That failed.
That failed. There's so much that... this is one of those that when we announced that we were doing it for Friday Night Who, I got a handful of, oh, you're doing that one tweets. That's pretty okay. except for that one part, or except for this, or the production value, or the, you know, and it's just so much of what we've reviewed in Davidson, especially Colin Baker, and especially Sylvester McCoy's eras, just gets dogged on by fandom in general. They just, you know, people love to hate these for some reason. And I didn't feel that way about this one at all. I came into it with a fairly set of fresh eyes and thought, wow, this is a really good episode. Yeah, there's a few little flubs that just... The overly dramatic pause between Ace telling the story of the boom and the cutting back and forth of the grenade. But it was done for comedic effect. I didn't think that was horrible. You know, and things like that. It's just, why do people got a bag on this
stuff? I think what happens is there's a collective mentality that when enough people dislike an era or dislike a doctor, or dislike, everybody feels like that's the thing to do, that you're not a Doctor Who fan if you don't dog these episodes. And I always hate that. I think that's just... Because there's a lot of times... I mean, there'll be times that I agree with him. Don't get me wrong. To End a Limit is quite possibly the worst Doctor Who episode ever.
Worse than Delta and the Bannerman?
I think most people will tell you that. However, there are a lot of things that we come across, and I'll say... Yeah, I just don't remember if I like this, or I don't know that I like this, or I don't think I like this one, and then remember that I do, or find out that I do because I hadn't seen it, or just, you know, remember parts of it, and then go, oh yeah, no, I do really like this. Now, Battlefield is one that I've always said that I've liked. I've never come down on Battlefield.
You just couldn't remember. If it was
just couldn't
right
remember
moment.
Which one. I always remember the Brig moments, though.
I will point to Silver Nemesis as kind of the exhibit A of this mm-hmm. argument, because yep. we were memory cheats
yep.
coming down on it, thinking, "Oh God, we're doing Silver Nemesis and this blah blah blah," and then we watched it and we're like, "What was everybody complaining about, including us?"
Right.
Because
right, well,
I've come to the opinion that's a lot of classic Who. People complain about it and nitpick it. And don't view it as it is. Yeah. I mean, as you guys have rewatched it with maybe different eyes. Mm-hmm.
That's what happens. Mm-hmm. Is I look for the... What I'll do is I'll watch an episode of Doctor Who, and I'll make my opinion based on that first viewing. So a lot of times what I'll do is, knowing that I don't like an episode, or not thinking that I remember liking an episode that well, I'll go back and look for it for other qualities. And when I look at it for the other qualities, a lot of times those outweigh the negatives that I had the first time I saw the story. And it probably because I've already gotten past all the things I didn't like.
Yeah.
I start to look for the things that I do, and it becomes a much more enjoyable story. Silver Nemesis is the perfect example of that one, where I specifically remember watching that, not liking it all. I didn't hate it. I didn't have, you know, bile for it. But I remember not liking it and not being one of my favorite episodes. Then when I went back and watched it and looked at the positives and the good things about it and looked at it with fresh eyes, I came back on it and said, well, no, I appreciate this one better. I still don't like it, but it's not one of my favorites.
Yeah.
But I have a better appreciation for it. So,
I guess I have trouble with fans of anything who have bile for what they are a fan of.
Yeah.
That to me, just does not scream fan.
Yeah.
Especially after watching The People versus George Lucas over the week.
Yeah, I haven't watched it yet.
You need to.
Yeah.
Keith and I both, serendipity, we both
same
wound
day.
Up watching it the same day, not knowing that we were watching it. And you totally need to watch that because it's an amazing documentary.
I've heard a lot of things about it.
But, there's so much of this that was fun and enjoyable. And obviously, okay, the Brig. Nicholas Courtney could come and read the phone book and people would be like, oh, the Brig's back!
Right.
And I'd be one of those people. I don't
right.
care. The
yeah,
Brig's
me
back.
Too.
I watched
but the, then to give him moments.
To give him moments
oh,
where he actually does
wow.
stuff and then knocks out the doctor.
Yes, in order to go in and face
and
the,
stop
oh.
the, you know,
and,
thing.
And where
because
you think
he
he's
knows,
almost going to bite the bullets?
He knows it's completely against the doctor's, you know, character
yes.
and nature. And he knows that the doctor would go in and do this but would not like that he's having to do it. And to do that and to step in knowing because, yeah, well, I can do this kind of thing. This is what I'm prepared for. And it's such an incredible moment. I love
it. How much
and then
fun,
the fact that he survives.
How much fun was it when we get the throwaway line, silver bullets, maybe?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And, of course, we're all chuckling because we've seen the werewolf episode.
And then he says, do we have any silver bullets?
But the Brig being the Brig... This is what's so great about him is because in some
just,
ways...
Just the list of bullets he has as a contingency is fantastic.
That's just it. Is he's very single-minded. protect Earth. That's kind of his thing. And so now there's something. I'm going to come out of retirement. I'm going to leave my fat palatial estate in the... Where did he get that pension from?
Well, yeah, Brigadier Generals probably make a lot of money.
But considering he wasn't in,
considering
in
what
undead.
He's done.
Oh, that's right, because he was
in a little shack and he was
that's
teaching.
That's right, he was teaching.
Yeah, but he was teaching. That wasn't... I didn't get the impression that was his retirement. That was his...
Well, he had retired from the Army because he clearly had done that by
but his wife,
five doctors. Cause
but his wife wasn't with him when he was teaching.
Right, right. Although he does mention Doris... In one of the Baker episodes, her name is dropped. So we get the impression they either had been dating or were married at that time. But for some reason, she wasn't with him or living with him when he was teaching on campus.
I remember him referencing her in The Spectre of Lanyon Moore.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he does drop her name in there, yeah.
Of course, that was after.
Yeah, that was after, but still.
At any rate, it's so great that he's just... He's so single-minded of purpose. He's almost a cardboard caricature cutout of a person because it's just, this is the brig. This is what he's here to do. But because of Nicholas Courtney being who Nicholas Courtney is and the actor that he was able to bring such depth to that character that we fawn all over him every time he shows up on screen. And this was no exception. We get this throwaway line about these bullets, and he immediately, what's his first thing? It's not, you must be joking. He's known the doctor long enough to bypass that and go to step two.
And the fact that he just
here.
Instantly recognizes the doctor. The fact that he just instantly recognizes the doctor as soon as he sees him.
That
was so great.
Such a good one there.
It was almost like his daughter later.
Oh, she's mentioned in Planet of Spiders.
Oh, okay.
That's the one. We haven't watched that. So we get that. We get a wonderful bit with Ace and explosives. Anytime we get to mix Ace and explosives, it's good.
Sorry, I got some background from Wiki. Actually, this is from TARDIS Wiki. They first met in Brighton in the mid-1960s, had a brief but passionate romance. It ended amicably when Alistair was sent overseas. The relationship seems to have been sexual, referencing TV, Planet of Spiders, and the comic The War Keeper's Crown. Doris married. Her husband, George Wilson, was killed in Northern Ireland from prose, The Scale of Injustice. In the 1990s, the Brigadier met Doris again, and they eventually married.
Huh.
TV, Battlefield, and prose, A Romantic Evening. They lived in a large house in the country. While they were boating in the early 2010s, the Lethbridge Stewart's boat capsized and Doris drowned.
Aww.
A conflicting account shows Doris having Christmas dinner with the Brigadier and the Eighth Doctor in 2012, which is, they keep saying prose, P-R-O-S-E. I don't know if that's an A. Prose, it must have been a series. So, anyway.
What does it say there?
P-R-O-S-E, Romantic Evening, P-R-O-S-E.
It means writing, prose.
So, novels.
Really? Is that what that's for?
You remember prose, poetry.
Okay. I'll take your word.
English.
Anyway, so there's a little background on Doris. Yeah, I don't remember prose, but anyway, so in literature form, anyway.
There you
literary
go.
Literary form.
Literary form.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. What were you saying before I got all excited about realizing Doris's background?
We were squeeing all over the meeting of Seven and the Brig. What else? Bambera. Let's talk a little bit about Bambera and how much. Keith was very uncertain about her.
I did not like her. And then she grew on me.
Well, I think as they established the relationship between her and, help me out here, what was it?
Well, she kind of took a step back from being the Brigadier.
Anselin.
It wasn't the lion.
Jackal.
Yeah, not Anselin.
Jackal.
Well,
Anselin.
When they start developing the relationship and playing off the comedy between the two of her asking him if he's married,
yes.
And then later him asking her if she's betrothed.
Yes.
That was absolutely wonderful. Well, you could tell and the nice thing is in such a short amount of time that those two characters are together, they really build that relationship appropriately.
Did.
They don't. It doesn't feel rushed, but it's done quickly enough that you could get it done in that span of time that they need for this story.
I didn't like her because, first off, we start, before we even meet her, we see the real Brigadier.
Yeah.
And then she shows up and is trying to be in charge. And I don't start liking her until the real Brig shows up and she starts backing off and letting him be in charge. And that's when she starts being a likable character. Maybe that's because of my affinity for the real Brig. For Lethbridge Stewart. I don't know if that's what it is, or just that the way her character was written so brash, and then when they pulled her back from being in charge, gave her more depth. I don't know.
I don't imagine you get to be a brigadier general without having some sort of forthright, no nonsense, this is the way we're sure. going to do it attitude. There are many people that couldn't do it, but she obviously, yeah, you fit right in this mold.
Which, and we've had other Briggs show up, and of course every time then, I'm like, that you're not a Brig. There's only one Brig for me.
I didn't make the connection until just now, that when in the Planet of the Dead story, when UNIT shows up, doesn't David Tennant make a reference to Bambera being the Brig or something?
I think you're right. I think he does.
I think he does now that I have to...
Mentally. No, I you're think you're Wiki? Absolutely right. Look. Yeah,
yeah, Wiki that. What's fun though is I watched the documentary, or some of it anyway, on the which is there's a couple of really good documentaries on the DVD, and both actors, Angela Bruce who played Winifred, and what was his name, Marcus Gilbert who played Anselin, are on the documentary, and both of them commented on how much fun the episode was to do because of their interactions with the other person. Oh. And you could just see that they both had a really good time doing it, and they talk about the kind of the relationship that they got into, and then they both kind of giggled mischievously as if, you know, if we were ever to get together again, I'm sure she could throw me over her shoulder into a car. Or, you know, I mean, you just kind of got the impression that a friendship was made on that set.
Yeah.
That it hasn't ended, that they're still having a good time with it. So that definitely showed through in their performances.
You're saying between the characters?
And the actors.
Oh, and the actors, okay.
Yeah.
Because the characters do go on in prose.
Oh,
yeah. To, yeah, actually be married and have kids.
Well,
they had twins.
Oh, good. Because they were building to that, and I'm glad someone took it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Another one that I thought was really great, I don't remember his name, the archaeologist who's digging up the site.
Oh, yeah, him.
Who initially came across when the doctors are, you know, in the pub arguing over the scabbard, and he kind of is almost going to fall into that, oh, you're going to be that guy, you're going to be argumentative and the scientist who knows everything, and I automatically don't like you. And then he stopped and he just kind of was like, yeah, okay, what do you need, and we'll do this. Oh, we're going to blow a big hole in it. Oh, well, all right. That's my life's work, and I do it for free, but, you know, okay, no problem. Oh, and we need you to stall anybody from coming down here. All right. And then he does, and he launches into this thing. Again, according to the documentary, apparently he had been studying, it's Kipling, I think is who they said it was, mm-hmm. And the guy went on for like 20 minutes. He had just, he's like, well, I've added a few lines, and they're like, okay. And he went and recited Kipling for 20 minutes, and they're like, okay. And they said, we left a little bit of it in there, but then we just had to cut, because it was like, you know, obviously there's no way we can leave all this in, but he was a firecracker, according to that.
Hmm.
But he was just a fun character. It was nice to see them, again, break type with not giving us that guy that, you're the know-it-all. Okay. There's nothing bad I can say about Battlefield. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And even, we'd obviously be remiss if we didn't talk a little bit about Morgan, who's Jean Marsh.
Mm. And her big role in Doctor Who.
Was not this. She was a former companion who came back. And she played.
And a former wife to a doctor.
Really? Where are you getting that? I didn't know that.
It's on Wiki. She married, she appeared several times in the BBC series Doctor Who, first appeared alongside William Hartnell in the 1965 serial Crusade as Lady Joanna. She returned later that year as companion Sarah Kingdom in the 12-part serial The Daleks' Master Plan. She was killed off at the end of that serial. She reprised her role as Sarah Kingdom in the audio plays Home Truth and Drowned World, Guardians of the Solar System, Five Companions, and Acronauts, and that's all of those. She also appeared in 1989 television serial Battlefield. She also married John Pertwee from 1955 to 1960.
Really?
Yes.
I did not know that.
She has had relationships with Albert Finney.
Well, now you're just dragging up everyone.
Yeah. We don't need to know all that.
Apparently, according to this, she also appeared in the fifth Doctor story, Earthshock, but I don't remember her.
That's not on the wiki.
I don't remember her either. One of the things I thought was interesting when I was reading some research on this was how some fans point to the fact that her confrontation with the Brig, she says, "The next time we meet, I will kill you." Curiously enough, in the Daleks' Master Plan, which Nicholas Briggs appears in as Max
Von Ryan,
she is the one that actually kills him in that episode. Her character, who is a companion of the Doctor, is the one that kills Max in that one. So that was kind of a neat time. Thousands of years later.
Yeah.
Because, you know, wibbly wobbly timey wimey.
A couple of things that I liked with the wibbly wobbly nature of this is the fact that we're getting all of this information and that everybody's referring to the Doctor as Merlin from an adventure that he hasn't had yet.
Yeah, I liked that.
That's very cool.
And
I kind of wish we could have seen that in some form or another. I thought that's where they were going. Half of this was going to be whatever's going on here, and then the other half was going to be Merlin time.
I'm glad that we've never paid that off. Now, I have heard that in books they have done that or gone there, but yeah, I'm kind of glad they've never done that because I like that imagination
And it makes me wonder, too, because he references the fact that, yeah, your face isn't right, but your spirit is. So which Doctor was it? I'm curious about.
I didn't even catch that. I'll be darned. Because they all right away notice that he's Merlin.
So. Yeah, Anselm says your visage or whatever
it's that,
is different. But.
Yeah, okay. It's that first interaction. And then the rest of it, they just drop it. And, oh, look, it's Merlin. Yeah.
And you have to... I think we touched on it on Friday Night Who, but you have to. I didn't get a chance to do the research. When the Brig goes in to fight the Destroyer, and the building blows up, and the Doctor's just beside himself, and you're supposed to die in your bed. Do we think that somehow?
I never looked it up, but I caught that, and I thought, wow, what an impactful statement for them to make there, because they would not have known that this was going to be years later when the 11th Doctor makes that phone call that talks about the Brig passing in his sleep.
Do you think that's why?
I think that's why that's included in closing time
because obviously as an honorarium to Nicholas Courtney and the way that happened. But I also like to think that, again, fans are running the asylum now in some ways, and that, you know, they're all people who have enjoyed Doctor Who for a long time, and that's why they're writing these episodes and giving these little harkbacks. And I'd like to think that came back from this,
right.
But it wasn't something that we made the connection until we sat down and watched.
And I think some people would point to the fact that, well, why? How did the Seventh Doctor know? Because did he go forward, and why wouldn't the 11th Doctor have known that he was going to die at that time? But I think that the key here is I don't think the Seventh Doctor knows. I think it's a statement he's making. You were retired. You were away from this. You were away from danger. You should have just died in bed.
You deserve to die in bed.
And so it was a self-fulfilling prophecy of the Seventh Doctor that, yes, that's where he did die, peacefully in bed, with a much more life ahead of him. So
yes.
I think that's what that is. I don't think that's the Seventh Doctor knew or had a premonition. I think it was sort of a hopeful statement from the Doctor, because at that point he thinks he is dead. So I think that's a hopeful statement from the Doctor that turns out to become a fulfilling prophecy.
I would agree.
So, I haven't talked much about this episode. This is my favorite Brig episode, and I think what makes this episode good for me is the Brig and all it's all surrounding. The thing that I think that the only gripe that I have about this episode, it's not even really a gripe. It's more of I wish they had done it this way, because I think it would have given the Brig even more of a heroic status. But I understand why they did it another way. But when the Brig asks the corporal or whoever walks by him, if they have silver bullets. That needed to be the, because the brig had the forethought after that hint is dropped to come through with that, I think it needed to be revealed that that's okay. I brought silver bullets it was a little too convenient having Ace find a box of silver bullets.
Okay, I could see that in that
pub. And so,
there was another scene though where they established after he asked the guy, "Do we have any silver bullets?" The guy runs up to him later. There's another cut scene where he actually has the silver bullets out.
Is it in that little box?
They're in the box, and that's why Ace finds them in the pub.
Was that a deleted scene?
But see,
no, it was totally in there.
I missed that too. And here's the thing, that I think that the silver bullets are
because
a vehicle.
I laughed because I thought this was a throwaway joke, and then it's like, no, the brig actually went down and tracked down.
Terrific. Well, I'm glad that there's a reason for them being in the pub. That actually fixes this a little more. But obviously, the reason why they're in there is a vehicle for Ace to follow the Doctor through that portal.
Because
she knows that she needs to bring him the silver bullets, because there is that conversation that that's what he needs in order to bring, because the chains were silver, and so that is the vehicle to push so that she goes through and she's there in the final confrontation as well. But I just would have liked the brig to have shown up with the silver bullets, because it was just his, like, okay, you said get silver bullets. I got
now
silver
we're
bullets
ready.
Yeah, yes. We're ready.
I was a little surprised that I really thought they were going to go a different direction with that when they first. I mean, I thought it was a throwaway line at first, but then when we get there and we make the reveal that the destroyer is bound by silver, mm-hmm. I thought, oh, this is going to be awesome because we've got these bullets. We can control him. He's going to wind up flipping sides here in a minute and be used to destroyer. And then it felt I was a little disappointed that no, we're just going to shoot him with them. But you know, that's.
I liked it.
it's the brig and a bullet.
The monster.
Exactly. I mean, that's the thing is...
That is following it up perfectly with, if there's a gun introduced in Act 2, it's going to be fired. If you're going to bring in a bullet, the brig's going to fire it.
Well, here's the thing is, the Doctor spent so much of his career with UNIT at this back-and-forth love-hate relationship with the brig, because the brig's solution for everything was blow it up. You know, just annihilate it. Get rid of it. And so to have this moment be with the Doctor, and the Doctor's going to do it. You take the final moment, you blow it up, and the brig taking on that responsibility, it makes it so much more impactful, because it's like the brig takes his spot. And you almost sort of sympathize with this is why the brig always did what he did, because this is who the brig is. This is what he's for. This is what, you know, that's what he's groomed for.
He's to do the things the Doctor's
want. It makes it so right. And I have nothing but praise for this episode. I mean, there are little issues. I'm also, another reason that I have this close to my heart is because I have a huge, I'm not into this as like I am Westerns, but I have a fascination for Arthurian legend. I've seen tons of film. I've read books, you know, and none of them are the same. So don't ever go into it thinking anybody's messing up Arthurian legend. It's kind of like Hitchhiker's Guide. There are just different versions of
Mom
the legend.
Mom said that to me. We went to see First Night with Connery and Richard Gere, and we walked out. And I was like, so what did you think? She's like, I didn't like it. I was like, what do you mean you didn't like it? She goes, well, that's not how it went.
I said, honestly, what I think...
What do you mean that's not how it went? She goes, well, you know, he's supposed to wind up in the... You know, the Arthur and Lancelot have to fight, and she has to go to the convent. That's... Richard Harris did it right. I said, Mom, it's Arthurian legend. She goes, and? Never mind.
Honestly, I think King Arthur, the Colin Farrell, was it? Keira Knightley movie? It was probably
bite your tongue. It's not Colin Farrell. It's
I'm sorry, it wasn't Colin Farrell. Clive Owen, yes. Yeah. Okay, Clive Owen and Keira Knightley film was probably the more accurate to truth.
There is no accurate to truth.
There's, well, it's all legend, but okay, maybe more realistic.
I mean, if you track
the movie
back,
is based on supposedly more realistic and more recent revelations that have been made and discovered about the Arthurian legend. So, did you know that?
The Arthurian legend was created in the 1400s. And was fictitious.
There was
and
based was borrowed, on reality,
it was,
wasn't it?
No, it was based on actual characters that had and was very romanticized and very changed.
Well, yes.
And a lot of the events were different than what they were actually.
And that's why I thought
that there was an archaeological dig that dug up artifacts that reveal that they think there actually was a Roman knight stationed in England.
Yes.
And they think that's where this Arthurian legend came from, that it is all based around this guy, which is what the story that King Arthur takes.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's not. Yes, that I know.
Okay.
That, but yeah, it is very romanticized and changed. All of the documentation of the Arthur legend,
it's a magician called Merlin. Of course it's romanticized.
Right, exactly.
No, that part's real.
And it was a guy from the future.
That's why I thought King Arthur was more realistic in the fact that it didn't have any of the magic and any of that stuff. Anything else about Battlefield?
High marks.
Thumbs up all around.
Loved it. All right, let's move on to...
The Power of Three!
Wanted to have my thing up here. Don't worry, it's not far away.
Your thing up?
Hey, watch it.
I'm asking what you're...
This is a family show.
I wasn't going there, you were.
I didn't go there. The Power of Three. The Doctor and the Pawns puzzle an unlikely invasion of Earth as millions of sinister black cubes arrive overnight, almost like presents falling from the sky. But what are they? What's inside them? And most importantly, who sent them? With the international community at a loss, it's left to the Doctor to unearth who is behind the mystery.
Dun, 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 dun! I have issues with this story. But I loved it.
He turns into a dum-dum-dum. I have issues with this story.
But I absolutely loved this one. So
wait,
good.
Before you go, I absolutely loved this one.
I absolutely loved this one.
Okay, it's all on the record.
We all loved this story. I think Sean and I have some of the same issues with it. But what makes this story so fantastic... is to focus on the characters, to focus on the relationships. And that's what sells this story, this episode. And really, the rest is nitpicking. Because...
It is nitpicking.
Yeah. It's... Really? Very RTD.
The ideas... There are RTD moments in this. The global...
And this is issue. The first global issue the 11th Doctor has dealt with. I've gone back and relooked. The silence in Day of the Moon is a global issue, but
don't realize
people don't remember it.
No, absolutely.
That's it. That's the most global it goes.
Yeah, I think you could argue that...
I went back and looked at the episodes.
No, I think you could argue that the Pandorica...
World War II, Churchill.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
But history.
No.
Modern day.
I think you can argue that the Pandorica and Big Bang.
That's a universal issue.
Well, yes, but it's also global within there. And even though people probably aren't aware of what's going on, it's still a global issue that the Doctor has to.
See,
a universal issue that the Doctor
I think
has
it's
to.
Universal more than global.
That was the last time that I had the RTD feel, I should say.
And I didn't really have that much of an RTD. Having seen now all of RTD, Pandorica and Big Bang doesn't have an RTD feel for me. This does.
Yeah.
But it's almost a Moffat take of an RTD feel. Yeah. I know Moffat didn't write this story.
Right.
But it's still, okay, we're going to do an RTD story, but do Moffat character analysis. And that's where this story is so fantastic. Glenn, you love this story.
I love this story. Absolutely. I mean... I'm going to go back to what Chrissy said because she nails it on the head with just the few words she says about it in her feedback. It's an exploration of the Pawn's character. It's the exploration of the Pawn's relationship, and it's so well done in 43 minutes.
It is
so well done. I absolutely love the fact that they brought Brian back. I was
Brian.
Boat as most people wrote, that they felt that Brian was going to be the you know, you can't do this. He was going to be the voice of reason.
I was kind of disappointed he flipped sides.
No, I love that. What happened to these companions? The Doctor has to basically explain, well, some of them have, left me. Some have been left behind. Some of them have died.
Not very many, though.
Yeah. And so I love the fact that then Brian is,
But he says, but not them. You know, I'll bring them back. And Brian, he just has that moment of you think he's going to say, you know, you've got to be, you know, he's going to be the voice of reason that you've got to let him go, you know. Which, and he even says, you know, it's not that they can't leave that. It's they can't leave you.
Yeah. And, oh, the exploration of their relationship is so fantastic. And I loved, absolutely loved his rationale of running. Because we've heard this all through Matt Smith's era, that he's running. And I love the explanation that he's not running from something.
I would disagree. He's been running since he grabbed Rose's hand in the shop and told her to run.
He's been running since he took Susan. I mean,
That's what it is. It's a play on the fact that the idea, we've always known the Doctor as the guy who stole the TARDIS and ran away. He's been running from his own people. He's been running from this. He's been running from that. We've always just kind of attributed that to him. And I liked the fact that they flipped it and said, he's not running from things, he's running toward them. Because they really hammered that home with Astronaut, mm-hmm. the Impossible yes. Astronaut. He makes a comment, I've been running. I mean, he even admits to it. Mm-hmm. But now
that's come to more of what I was thinking of, yeah. of the fact that they've made reference to the running much more in 11th sure. Run.
Yeah, that's been a focus. That's
yes. And then the turn of on its head of, I'm running towards you.
I'm running toward things.
Yeah. And you and Amy, or you and Rory, because you're seared into my hearts. You're the first people I saw when this regeneration started.
Yeah.
So fantastic.
That's another thing. The conversation between he and Amy on the, were they on a roof or a bridge or something? They're on a bridge, I think.
So. I think they're on a bridge.
Yeah.
Right outside Tower of London.
The conversation there really, it explains their relationship with each other. From the get-go.
Yeah.
I mean,
the growth
really,
both of them have taken.
And the reason why Amy can have the love of her life be Rory and be her husband and be married and still have the Doctor as her best friend.
Yes.
This conversation, because I've always had that little issue with the fact that, you know, it's been better this season, but you always have that in the back of your mind that Amy maybe still has, you know,
some sort of feelings for
the Doctor, because especially from that moment that happened before her wedding night with the Doctor, but that was because of her programming. That was because of how she was raised and how she grew up. But so it's understandable that happened, and I'm a little forgiving of that. But you always have that. But this conversation really sealed the deal of their relationship. And I think it's setting up whatever's going to happen next week nicely.
I think so, too.
It's going to set it up really nicely. And I think this is why it's going to be a tearjerker that
Moffat really... And it's setting up for heartbreak.
This is the heartbreak that Moffat has promised us that's coming. I love the fact that Sean mentioned earlier about how Rory... Well, this was off mic. I'm sorry. This is probably something you're going to talk about. But how Rory wasn't the...
He wasn't the Debbie Downer.
Yeah, he wasn't the reason to say, well, yeah, we need to quit. We need to quit going. We have to stay here. It wasn't him. It was a mutual decision, and then it was as much of a decision of his and hers when they decided, well, not right now. We don't have to make that decision now.
Yeah. When
you can tell he's enjoying his adventures with the Doctor just as much as she is.
They've kind of written Rory in that direction where he's fine with it, but at some point in time, we've got to stop. And when we get to that moment when he says, we have two lives, real life, doctor life, real life only gets a look in every now and then, what do we do? Choose. And he puts it out there. This is the first time that we've really spoken about it.
It's nice to hear Amy say choose. Because it could have so easily been Rory saying...
It's Rory saying it.
It's Rory saying choose. It.
No, Amy says choose.
Rory says it, and then Amy says, so what do we do? And Rory says, we choose.
Oh, yeah,
but then
that's
the TARDIS shows up, and so that's why we're thinking, oh my God, it's going to be the downer. The TARDIS shows up, they both look, and Amy says... But not today. And he goes, no, not today. And he's just as excited as she is to go running off.
That's
and
right.
that fixed everything. Because it was like, Rory's not the bad guy in this. Mm-hmm. I love that.
And that's one of the things I loved about this episode was the Doctor shows up. He stays with him. He leaves. He comes back. He takes them for a while. He comes back. And we see nuggets. It's like Pond Life and other shorts we've gotten in an episode length. And we don't need full explanations of what's going on. It's like the Doctor getting painted in that picture last season and all of him before he picks them back up, but with the pawns. And that's one of the things I love the most about this story.
It's certainly understandable why Chris Chimble was chosen to write Pawn Life.
Oh,
because
yes.
Because his episodes are Dinosaurs on a Spaceship, which introduces us to Brian and gives us some of life at home. and this particular episode, Power of Three, that brings back Brian and gives us a taste of the pawns at home.
And Brian is just as wonderful.
The same thing that Pond Life did. And so, in fact, it makes sense why Pond Life always struck me as odd. Because you have this wonderful setup of the pawns at home and their relationship and what's going on. And then you have that jarring last episode where Roy's running off and there's this huge fight and it's that, you know, it's that. And I always thought, how weird is that? But it was obviously when Daleks of Manhattan, where did I get that from? Silent of the Daleks. Ooh. When it comes up and you realize where they're at in their relationship, it had to be done.
Yes.
So it almost feels like, I don't want to say shoehorned in there, but it really kind of feels like it was kind of an added to the tail end because it happened so abruptly and so fast. And so then that's patched up so that it can make everything beyond that be, again, the
so that we can get back to...
It can be the pawns again. Yeah. You know what I mean? We get back to that. And so it works in the context. And so I'm going to throw this out there, and this isn't my idea because I saw this speculated on Gallifrey Base. I'm wondering if Chris Chibnall is being groomed as the next showrunner.
Hmm.
Because he's been given such a heavy load this season. Because I think he's even got... I'm not 100% sure, but I think he's even got one more episode coming up in the next half.
Really?
Which would be technically four stories for him because he did Pond Life, Dinosaurs, and then... This
is possible.
If in fact my sources are true and he does have one more coming up, I just wonder if maybe Moffitt's about ready to, after the 50th, rail it in and say, okay, I'm going to move on to other projects now.
So. I'd be fine if Moffitt left with 11.
Well, it could be. Cause,
I think those two are so hand in hand.
Tennant and Davis were left at the same time too, so it would make sense. So
let's go back to Brian real quick. We were discussing after we watched it that as awesome as Brian is, he would make the worst companion ever.
Really?
Yeah, because he'd stay still and get killed. He wouldn't run off like he's supposed to.
Hey, when the doctor walks in, Brian, you're still here. He told me to stay and watch the cubes. That was 4 days ago. Really? Well, I've been alone with my thoughts. How wonderful, blah, blah, blah. And I made the comments like, Brian's going to be the best companion. He should totally go. He'd be this. And then I thought about it. And I was like,
no.
Because the doctor would say, stay here. And he would.
He'd actually listen to the doctor.
I think that's why he would be the best companion, because he'd be the most... Okay, not the best companion. He'd be the most loyal of companions.
He would be the most loyal, absolutely. Yeah, he wouldn't be the best, because he wouldn't be independent.
So much of what we enjoy about best companion ever is their willingness to go into the fire to help.
Right.
To solve the problem, to...
Which, and he would, but after the doctor invited him in.
Yeah. The doctor would have to call for help, and then Brian would go run into the rescue.
But you know what makes Brian such a great companion for the doctor? Is his methodical approach to these cubes. They were tasked with watching the cubes. And while Amy and Rory are going off living lives, Brian's still watching the cubes. When he's not watching the cubes, they say, well, you're not sleeping because you're watching the cubes? No. I video the cube when I sleep, and then I watch it on fast forward in the morning.
And then the fact
brilliant.
He doesn't even call units, he calls it
UNIT.
UNIT, yeah. I love that.
I didn't even catch that until the second time.
It's wonderful. It's wonderful. I'm finding flaws with this. You guys got to point them out here because I'm not seeing them.
When it comes to the cubes, there are plot issues, including the... vent mouth people.
Okay. There are a couple of
a couple of plot holes you can drive a truck through, but it doesn't diminish.
What are they for?
Yes, that's a question.
What are they doing with the people they stole?
Yes.
Neither of those questions
and
are answered.
What happens to them after the ship explodes?
I know what happens to them. They died.
We don't know if they were on the ship or not.
Oh, the cube guys. Yeah.
No, yeah. The mouth people. The yeah.
No, we don't. We certainly don't. I don't have a problem with that.
And
I don't have a problem that we've got some alien out there loose, because that just sets up hey, we can bring these guys back and resolve that issue.
Or UNIT's going to go take care
of it. Not a problem with that. What I do have a problem with is putting in something in there so obvious.
What's the purpose of them?
Exactly. Putting so obvious as the purpose to what they're doing. Why are they taking these people from the hospital, and what are they doing with them on that ship?
Yeah.
I mean, are they already dead? If they are already dead, then it's...
Which, they obviously aren't quick acting.
If they are already dead, does it justify the fact that the doctor left them there when the ship blew up? And I'm going to concur with what we were saying earlier, where you guys started launching in and I stopped you and said, oh, wait a minute, we're going to discuss this episode later. Is him leaving there and them blowing up, I would agree with one of you said, made the statement that it happens so quickly, he doesn't realize that he's going to send that charge back into the ship and cause...
He says, oh, dear, there's going to
be a... It's such a gut... And so... It's really kind of a you save yourselves at that point because there's no way we're going to get in. So I was actually justified or forgiving of that because it did happen so quickly. My other issue with that is you just see them wheel Brian out, but you don't see him wheel him through the portal. And so one of my issues was, oh, please show me Brian again. Please show me Brian again. He certainly wasn't on that ship. He wasn't on that ship. And then they show him all sitting around the table, and I went, oh, thank goodness.
See, that's the thing. I don't blame the doctor for the deaths of those people. I got the impression he was telling Amy and Rory to get all of them out, not just Brian and Rory. And so they...
So you're blaming Amy and
Rory for not saving those people.
I don't blame anybody because I don't think that was communicated well enough. And again, they came back to help the doctor. And I think it was just such a quick, we've got to get out of here.
And it
now
was a very quick, so I could excuse some of them. Yeah. But again, they could have shown some people
being saved. The other
thing
you have to fault back to is...
I still think they got out.
The other thing you have to fault back is they're really... And we're going to talk about this, casualties of war. The doctor makes these decisions in order to save a planet of many who are going... There's going to be another wave of heart attack victims.
And aside from those people...
They're purging humanity as a plague, so being saying that humanity is a plague. So, yeah, I'm forgiving of the fact that there were probably 10 people on that ship that bit it.
And we had an everybody lives.
If, in fact, they were still alive, we saved that many more. And, yeah, we brought back the first wave of people that had the heart attacks because we...
Which, that was a very RTD.
Not
only are we going to give one-third of the world heart attacks...
We're going to bring them back.
They've been dead.
Defibrillator powers.
They've been dead for what, 10 minutes? 15? Nothing. But we restarted
their
heart.
I want to pretend that they were 4 minutes, which they say is the about the time the brain starts going dead.
Oh, is that what the...
Yeah. It was a quick 4 minutes.
I imagine here in the States...
It was a long 4 minutes.
I imagine here in the States there were probably a few unfortunate incidences where somebody dropped dead of a heart attack, 4 minutes later rose, and then got blown away by a shotgun because people started shouting zombies. Okay.
I feel bad for those poor souls that had a heart attack 15, 20 minutes before the cubes caused the heart attacks. If you'd have just waited 20 more minutes to have your heart attack, have been revived.
Hold that off.
He didn't say it either, but as he's waving the sonic around the control thing, I'm totally thinking you're reversing the polarity on these cubes, aren't you? That's totally what you're doing with these things.
I was fine with the screwdriver in that instance. And I'm almost okay with the screwdriver tapping into Jax's computer and fixing the self-destruct. It is a tool.
Those are my points.
He's using the tool in order to work on the electronics in the shock ship.
In this instance, it's the interface.
I'm forgiving.
He's just
there.
Using it to access their computer.
It's when it becomes the tricorder and getting the...
I have issues with
issues
it
like
as a tricorder
that.
Also.
When he walks into a room, whips it out, waves it around, consults it, and then decides on something. Whether it's true or not, whether it's actually doing anything or this is just his way of being cool, we don't really know.
Yeah. Well, other
but,
that.
You know, it happened in unit when the power went out. Yep. He pulled out the sonic. Is there a problem with the grid? Okay, so now, he didn't actually find that out from the sonic. He's asking a question.
That's true.
So is that a use of it? Is it telling him, hey, the power's offline? Well, yeah, I got that.
Or is he looking important?
Or is he looking important?
Yeah, like I'm figuring this out.
That's my argument
with
the sonic.
The other one is the girl. It does sense the girl as he walks by. Did he happen to see something glimmer in her eyes?
Well,
and so he's pretending to, he's again feigning.
Well, he said she was the source of the, you know, he was tracking. Yeah. This is one of those instances where kind of borderline. It's tracking something. Okay, now we've got here. And you know, he uses it to deactivate her, but again, it's being used as a tool to interface with an android. Which, I'm sorry, the android chick is way creepier than the box mouth.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would agree.
And the blue face and everything. My argument for the Sonic stuff is that David Tennant's Doctor used it just as much to interface with computers as Smith does.
It's not the interfacing with the computers that has the problem, but it's now gotten worse. The tricorder stuff.
That was my point last week. So you're not going to win this argument.
You weren't specifying what your argument was. I did. I specifically said overusage, general term.
When it became a tricorder, and you said, I don't care that it's a tricorder. You said that.
I mean, go back and listen to that episode. Save it for the Sonic screen discussion. We're going to get into this. The get out of jail free card in 2 weeks. You can talk about that. There are a lot of things that I overlooked
in this because it was such a heartwarming character study, fan wank. I mean, it just the fanboy in me was just leaping with joy. Although I saw her name 2 or 3 weeks ago when they were announcing the cast list.
Yes.
And when I saw her last name was Stewart, the first thing I thought was, hey, if this is a unit story, that's who this is. And then when you said, like maybe even the following week, that no, it was back when we were pairing them up and you said you heard it was a unit story, that sort of justified my – it was longer ago than 3 weeks because it was before the series started again. But you said that, oh, you know, you
– Rumor is.
Rumor it's is a- it's a unit story. I went, because I thought this has got to be it, but they weren't using the Lethbridge turret. But when that was revealed and
all of that stuff was fantastic.
Even though I just suspected that was a case, I still had those goose pimples. I was like, oh, that's so cool!
And how serendipitous of us that our last Doctor Who proper, not your stupid dimensions in time.
Yeah. No, I completely concur that is the Briggs' last Doctor Who appearance. And this is the first appearance of his daughter. I think that was fantastic.
Paired up so nicely.
I love the fact that also that Chrissy said that she earned her spot on her merits. I love the fact that she is not a military. It's the scientists that run UNIT because the Brig put him in that direction because of the fact that, you know, that's where everything leads to with UNIT is the scientific evidence and all of that and how that's what brings them to where it is. And so that's what it needed to be was a scientist running this. And that was brilliant. And I think it's the doctor's interaction with him. As the scientific advisor. That's his influence in order to make him feel that way so as to push her in that direction. Loved that.
I commented to Keith when we were watching it when she first showed up and started giving the no nonsense and the dogs love a run out and blah 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 blah. I looked at Keith and I said she feels like Carolyn Shaw.
John, a little bit.
She totally feels like Liz Shaw. Carolyn John.
John. Yeah.
I know what you meant when you said it.
She feels like Liz Shaw.
Yep.
And she just had that air about her, that vibe. And as we went on. And when they show up in the Tower of London, and she says, oh, yeah, I've also got, you know, death squads and this, that, and the other thing, and turns around and walks off, and he goes, I like her. And it's just, yeah, we're there. And then they get that moment when he goes, well, of course you are. You know, you have to.
Who
else would you be? Oh,
I'm going to speculate a little bit. I'm wondering when they first sit down and watched and wrote this story and maybe even cast this character, if they didn't think about making this Liz's daughter.
Oh.
Because she's so similar to Liz.
I could see that.
And changed direction and said, no, this would be even cooler if she was, you know, the Briggs daughter.
Did we get, was it a Sarah Jane story that talked about Liz was on the moon?
Somewhere that's referenced.
Liz Shaw's on the moon base or something.
Somewhere that's referenced, but I don't remember now where that came from. I don't think it was Sarah Jane.
Hmm.
The memory cheats.
Do we think we'll get her back?
I hope so.
At some point. I don't think we need to, but I'd like to see her again. I enjoyed her character enough. Yeah. Maybe she's tracking down the cube mouths.
Maybe. I'm sure that's what UNIT's doing after the fact, because Torchwood's busy off and doing something else.
Torchwood is, yeah.
Disassembled.
Wait, careful. I haven't seen the end of the Miracle Day yet.
Missing, presumed dead.
Two episodes from finishing that stupid miniseries. I haven't done it yet.
It's not on the schedule yet. You've got time.
I know.
Okay, so here's the deal. I love Brian for all of the things that we already talked about and more. I just love the fact that he's Brian. Mm-hmm. I love the fact that
he's
Mr. Weasley.
He's the new Wilf.
He's the new Wilf. He's cool. I love the fact that we finally get that family tie that we had all through RTD's era with Rose and her mom and Martha and her family. And Donna and Wilf. And, we don't care about the mom, but Wilf.
Yeah.
And so now we've got Amy and Rory and River and that whole family aspect. But this kind of grounds it. Brian is the linchpin to getting it back to Earth. He's kind of the, oh, you are a normal family. You've got people here.
You're a pond.
And
I am not.
I love his very straightforward.
And Roy's kind of,
yeah, you are now.
I love his straightforwardness with watching the cube, with when he's in there and he's holding it up and he's going, it could be this, it could be this. Maybe it's a jigsaw puzzle. Maybe it's a tiny robot inside. Maybe this, and the doctor has to stop him. You've covered all the bases. Give me that back.
Yeah. You can tell, though, that the doctor's impressed with his thoroughness. He's impressed with his logic. In fact, he says your something logic. I can't remember exactly how he states it.
How very thorough, how Brian, very thorough. Or something along those lines.
But just all of this fits in with, this is the man who carries a trowel on him.
Yes. Yeah.
This is not anything new.
Ready for everything.
This is the perfect, he's so adaptable. This kind of goes back into that best companion ever that he just, okay.
Yep.
Dinosaurs on a spaceship with you. Doesn't care. I loved him. I loved that we finally pinned down that what we kind of suspected had been happening through these other episodes was that they are being dropped off, and then he'll come and pick them up, and they're gone for 7 weeks or whatever, and then they come back for a couple of months.
Okay, did you guys get the impression that it's been 10 years since the wedding, or 10 years since end of 11th hour?
Same.
But for Amy, it'd be a little longer than 10 years.
Well, no, because even though she was off gallivanting before her wedding night, you have to presume that it wasn't that long. I mean, she wasn't gone for years, maybe months.
Well, he technically brings her back.
10, 11 years. Yeah. Well, I know that's what I'm saying is, he's saying from Amy's perspective, well, no, because from Amy's perspective, he showed up when she was 11.
Well, yes, but
what
since
I'm
she
is,
got in
yeah,
the TARDIS.
But what I'm saying is, I think it's from since when she got in the TARDIS.
I think
it's 10 that's much more than 10 years, though, still. That might be 11. I mean,
be.
it's
yeah. okay.
neither here nor there.
Only from the standpoint that comment was made. When it was just her and the doctor sitting there on the dock,
but she said
on the bridge.
Well, no, that was at the table.
That was
before he's decided to stay for 4 days,
right?
Oh,
and she said we think it's been 10 years, so maybe it's since Rory joined. I don't know.
I think it's probably semantical, but it's close enough because again, he was picked up the night before their wedding.
Yes.
But of course, she had been traveling with him and it had only been months.
Hang on.
And to him, it was the night before.
It also could be 10 years since the universe was rebooted.
It's 11 years because he's the 11th Doctor.
Okay.
You just got to know how to handle it.
It's been 10 or 11 years, yes.
Okay.
I was just curious what you guys' opinion was on that. Yes, 10 years.
I got the impression that they've been together for 10
years.
Was
it since the reboot of the universe or since he picked her up?
It's the same thing. It all revolves around the same moment in time. It's the night before her wedding.
Okay.
He returns to our world because she wishes him back on her wedding day.
Yes.
It's all Pentacle wedding. That's what I'm saying.
But they've also
established...
It also establishes in this episode that time truly does progress for the companions, regardless of how time is progressing on Earth.
I don't think we needed this episode to say that.
No.
But yes, say that.
Yeah.
Sure.
So that's why I was asking.
Right. So that's... They made
Where,
that,
what's
they
happening
made the
on
point,
Earth doesn't matter what's happening to Amy and Rory.
Last week, I think it was, when...
We're aging faster.
Yeah, we're aging faster than our friends are going to start to notice. Well,
that's what I'm saying, is what's happening to Amy and Rory doesn't matter what's happening around the wedding, because they could have traveled
I'm saying from the... I know what he's saying.
You get what I'm saying?
I'm saying literally in our time stream.
I'm not asking on our time
from
stream.
From the wedding is where we're... No, but that's what matters, Keith. No, listen. That's what matters. because it's 10 years in their real life.
In Amy and Rory's life, yes.
Yes, not in their adventurous life, which is obviously taking longer than the 10-year period.
See, I got the impression that the adventure 10 years was the adventures and real life.
Oh, no. Okay.
It wasn't real life. It hasn't been. They haven't married for 10 years.
I see what you're saying. For them, yes. It's been 10 years. Okay, then it's been 3 for... Let's say it's been three because of serial time. Okay, I got you.
Okay.
Yes. I see where you're coming from.
That's why it matters when the time was from.
I see where you're coming from. So, yeah, I think it is 10 years from the time that she started traveling with him in the TARDIS. Right. Yes. Okay. Interesting. Gotcha.
A lot of misunderstanding.
Yeah, in real time, would only be
you guys exhaust me, just for the record. I don't know if our listeners feel this way at the end of a podcast, but I'm just like, man. Okay, so I love everything about Brian. I loved the fact that we pinned down the timing of these adventures taking place. I loved the fact that Unit came back. I missed the black outfits with the red berets a little bit. I would kind of like to have seen that carry over, not because we have to have the same uniform, but just to give it that extra
tie-in.
Still black uniforms. She's made some changes, so
I almost feel like Unit was underutilized in this story.
It was a throwback.
It was a throwback, and that
didn't bother me
that
they were underutilized.
Let's go back. I don't think she would have had a hand in the uniforms. I think she's a director in Unit. I don't think she would be in charge of the military prowess of things. I don't think that she would be in charge of uniforms. She certainly wouldn't be in charge of certain missions.
If her focus is on the science first, she would have had some influence with whoever the military aspect of it was.
But I don't think that
looks bad if we're stomping around in stormtrooper outfits. We need to rein this back a little bit. This is even worse
because they've got the helmets and the goggles and all that.
They look more like police SWAT than they do paramilitary.
Oh, to me, that's even worse.
You think?
Yeah, because you don't send the SWAT in unless it's really, really bad. Yeah, I mean, at least paramilitary, it's like a peacekeeping type thing. But no.
And she took the stance of, why, you can't knock on the door? Muscle and you can't knock. Yeah, exactly. So obviously, she's not in charge.
Right. She's guiding. She has a lot of power. She has a lot of control.
She's redirecting. Mm-hmm. And she's still in the process of redirecting.
She's not in command. She's not in total command.
I loved the real life segments of this. I quite honestly, if Amy and Rory were to get a spinoff TV show that was just called Pond Life, and the Doctor never showed up,
as long as Brian's there,
I think I'd be okay with watching it because the parties that they threw, and even though there were the little underlying tension of when is this going to happen or you've been gone or whatever, they look like they have a fun life. They look like they're people that I would enjoy hanging out with on a weekend or going to one of their parties.
He's doing his dream job, which is a nurse, and she's writing a travel blog or travel magazine.
A journalist and a nurse.
Yeah.
Honestly, that's what I could have done without the cubes throughout this entire story. The cubes was a plot device to bring the Doctor and keep him to stay and to bring him back.
I don't think you could have done without the cubes,
but I think if they could have crafted,
it could have been any MacGuffin.
If they could have crafted the same story without an alien influence of just them and the Doctor popping in, just from a different perspective, I think it would have been good.
It would have been enjoyable to see into the life of the Pawns, but it would have sucked as a Doctor Who episode.
It would have been Doctor Light.
Well, no, yeah. It wouldn't even been Doctor Light. It would just been. It wouldn't even had that Doctor Who feel. Cubes are immensely necessary for this story, and they work really well even on a most simplistic level. That's what I thought was brilliant about this, is they brought a device in, a MacGuffin in, that really was believable in the aspect of that. You know, they made the comment they're bringing them in their homes like iPods. I mean, I love that comment. I love the fact that they become little trinkets to people, and that's what the purpose for these cubes were, was for them to bring them into their homes, to analyze them, to study them, to gather all this information about the humans, to make them trust these cubes, you know, thinking they were totally harmless before they, you know, activated.
And that was wonderful.
No, I don't think the cubes could have been taken away, but it could have been replaced by any MacGuffin. Yes, I would agree.
That's almost where I agree with Sean, that they could have built up to a cliffhanger of the reveal of who's behind it all.
You guys are so totally wrong.
Well, now, hang on.
as long as the second episode was filled with as much real life as this one.
No. I think that would have gotten to a point where that would have been much.
If your cliffhanger's there, it doesn't work. Here's the deal. Of all of the episodes this season that people are complaining about, well, I wish it would have been two parts to kind of give us a little more feel to it. I disagree. I don't think any episode this season needed to be a two-parter. But there are things that all of these episodes I would have liked to have had expanded. This one in particular really felt like it could have used more because my one complaint, and this is a minor complaint, I loved everything about this episode, but my one complaint is the end. The end with this Gallifreyan nursery rhyme, this Gallifreyan myth comes back to haunt us. We don't know anything about it, and we don't get to. We don't get to find out who they are, where they're from, why they're here, why the cubes. We get a little bit about they're cute and humanity's going to pick them up. Fantastic. We've roped you into it. It's a trap. I gotcha. But that's it. Everything is dropped.
And then other than the fact that they're pest control for the galaxy.
We don't get any...
That's all it had to be, though.
But we don't get any character development. It didn't need to be a Gallifreyan lullaby, though.
Well, but...
That's what allowed the Doctor to know.
That's just
Otherwise,
it.
He would have to wave the
that's
sonic
just
around.
It. That was simply a... Yeah, it was a... You just keep saying lullaby. It was a nursery
rhyme.
Story. Not a lullaby. You wouldn't lull a kid to sleep with that.
Well, but that's what
scary
she makes the comment. Well, what a horrible bedtime story.
Well, bedtime story. But not a lullaby. Yeah. You don't lull a kid off sleep with a scary story. You lull them off with soothing sounds or soothing tones.
He makes the comment, this was a story, and I thought
it was a bedtime story.
It was a bedtime story.
Invented to keep Gallifreyan children in their beds at night.
Right.
Which is
what grim fairy tales were for as well.
Right. Yeah. This
we're just using the wrong
term. Exactly. Okay. Yes.
This gives the impression that it's a stay in bed or else the blah, blah, blah will get you.
The boogeyman.
Okay. They're the boogeyman. They're a Gallifreyan boogeyman. So that lends a little bit of weight to them, in my book, because it's something. I mean, obviously, the Time Lords of old are this huge, established historical race. They've been there through everything. They're in control of everything. Blah blah blah. They have things that they use to frighten their kids. So there's, and all of this stuff.
There are things more powerful than them. Yes.
We know all of this stuff is based in some truth,
right?
And even the Doctor's not quite willing to admit that. I thought you were myth. But here he is face to face with one of them on a ship in orbit, threatening the planet.
Which is ironic because this isn't the first time he's come face to face with a nursery rhyme.
But all of that gets
Shada.
Oh, I was thinking something that's coming up in an Eighth Doctor. Yeah, Sagreus.
All of that gets. We're not going to talk about it because we're rushed to get to the ending. Because as Phil pointed out, we got 5 minutes to reveal what's going on with the cubes. Go, and they do, and we blow up the ship. We leave. Maybe dead, maybe alive people in pods there because of the snap decision that was made. We killed everybody on the other six ships, if there were more of them, if there was one for each portal.
I didn't get that impression.
I didn't either. I got the impression all six portals led to the same location.
I don't know. He had seven screens up, and when he started the feedback loop, they all activated. So, I don't know.
Right. That's why I think that's the originating location.
Each screen activated
every one of those. Yeah.
But each screen might have been another ship. We don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm just saying, there was
nothing lent me to think that.
There was a lot that could have been developed and wasn't. Now, having said that...
I don't think it needed it.
I don't think it needed a second episode. Here's the problem that we've run into, and this is where people are going nuts and getting confused. Everybody's saying, oh, I wanted two parts of that. No, you didn't. The problem is, we're getting feature film stories...
In 45 minutes.
In 45 minutes.
Yeah.
That is the problem, is that these are big, epic stories, but they're not being given the full-blown feature-length format. So, yes, there are things that are being cut out and compressed. It's like when you go from a book to a movie. Well, we're going from a movie to a television, so it's that same kind of compression rate that's going on. And so there are things that are being glazed over and things that are missed. I think Chris Chibnall did a fantastic job putting this together, and as you pointed out, the focus is on the characters. The focus is on the story and the development of what's going on with them. And quite honestly, this is a gang. This is the proper use of a gang.
Yes.
Yeah.
As opposed to what happened in Dinosaurs on a Spaceship, where he's like, I've got a gang now. No, you've got Brian. You don't need anybody.
Right. You didn't need a gang hunter.
And the reference to the power of three at the end, I understood where they got that ties in, where they got the title, and where they were originally doing the title, Cubed. But I'm sorry, that's power of four. Brian was such was so important in this story
But Brian doesn't go off and save plants.
But he doesn't go off.
He stays behind to water the plants.
That's right.
But,
Brian was important to tell this story. Brian's not important to the being the power behind saving the universe. And that was the point that they were driving
home.
Okay.
I think he was important to saving the Earth, just not the universe. He played his role.
You guys in your semantics. He did. There are three people.
Right. I understood where they were going with
it. He got captured, for crying out loud. And
well, then he was playing the role of a companion.
And they woke him up. And he's just...
And then they wheeled him out of the gurney. Yeah. He did a lot there, didn't he? No, he was... Just, yeah, great. The last thing I'm going to say about this, because we're running really long tonight... The last thing is ultimately the thing I love the best about this episode is even far above all of the fan wank and everything else, I absolutely loved Matt Smith in this. I loved his character. I loved how the 11th Doctor was played. I love the sight gags and the gimmicks and the physical comedy, and Matt Smith pulls it off so well.
Any other Doctor... Could not have done
not
lying
this
on the floor
one.
Being
not
defibrillated.
Which not, or having a heart attack.
We've had
and
doctors
continually
lose one
trying
of their hearts.
Continually trying to take charge of the situation, only to be interrupted by a heart failure. It was just incredible. It was so well done. It was so well acted. His character was so thoughtful in this one. It was just I absolutely can't say.
This was a very well balanced doctor,
Matt. He shined in this episode.
I have a couple of questions I want to ask you guys. The very, very, very beginning of the episode, life with the Doctor was like this, and chaos erupts, and clips, and things exploding, and whatever. The shot of the Earth in that scene—that
was from Wedding of River Song.
Was from Wedding of River Song. And all of the pretty stars surrounding Earth are actually galaxies exploding because it's after the TARDIS is blown up and everything's going to... Yes. I went back and checked.
That wouldn't have been Wedding of River Song.
No, that was Pandora.
No, that was Wedding of River Song because all of existence was going out of... Yeah, okay.
No, no.
It was Pandora.
No, no, no.
Was it Pandora?
Pandora is where
Big
the universe...
Big Bang is where everything was
okay.
going.
Okay.
I was thinking of the signals coming in for the Doctor in the alternate universe.
Here's the thing. Now, again, this is a very RTD thing. What are we going to do? We're going to start with the Earth... And launch into our narrative. He did that all. He did that in Rose. He did that every season. Started with here's Earth, and then we get some voiceover narration. So here we get Earth and this voiceover narration, but it's not Earth with nothing happening. It's Earth with chaos erupting around it. But her voiceover narration goes: Life of the Doctor was like this: : It's unspoken, but it's there, indicating that everything that follows that is the chaos with the Doctor. Why that particular shot? Why not reuse one of the other shots of peaceful Earth and nothing happening? Why use...
Because it's pretty.
Well, I wonder if there's not more to it.
No.
I don't think there is.
I really believe...
Look,
that
Keith, we're agreeing on something.
I really believe that this is a hint that's been dropped as to, yes, we haven't forgotten the TARDIS explosion. We're going to get there eventually.
You keep hoping.
I really honestly believe
that. You just
that.
Keep hoping.
Secondly, I didn't catch it in this episode, but supposedly some eagle-eyed fan who happens to be on that Rory is the Master conspiracy theory group pointed out that there is a fob watch on Rory's nightstand table. And
no.
It's either in this or it's in Pawn Life.
Okay, I'm going to take issue with that. A guy can't have a pocket watch? Who says it's a fob watch?
I have one. Does that mean I'm the master?
I have one, too.
I have one also. That doesn't mean it's a fob watch.
It just means fob watches are cool.
I am the master.
I don't subscribe to that theory.
A fob watch is different than a pocket watch, right?
That's why I grew a goatee. I knew there was a reason. And now I'm remembering. I'm going to go home and open that thing. I've never opened it. Can you believe that? I got this thing and I never opened it.
You've never opened it?
No.
Wow,
really?
Surprising.
I don't subscribe
to the... A fob watch is different than a pocket watch, yes?
I don't subscribe to the... No, it's just a fob watch. The only difference is the fob watch has the fob, which goes through your vest.
Right.
Oh.
It doesn't have a chain. Well,
I didn't realize
that. It's a small one.
Yeah. That's the only difference. Mm-hmm. At any point, I don't subscribe to the theory, but I thought that was interesting that people are that nuts that they're pointing things out. And it's, again, kind of a neat thing because Rory would totally own a pocket watch. Look at his dad.
It was
a gift from Brian.
And it's engraved.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's who this guy is. Of course he has one of those. So I thought that was fun. I wish I'd written down the where it originated. I saw on Facebook a theory that somebody, not a theory, but just a, hey, what if? And it set my imagination racing. And I wanted to mention
which has nothing to do with this episode.
It has absolutely nothing to do with this episode, so I apologize for bringing it up. But we get to the end of the 11th. We get to the fall of the 11th, end of Matt Smith's run. And this person postulated, he said, what if he starts the regeneration process and we don't see 12? Instead, we get a whole season flashback of Paul McGann episodes. And I went, oh, that is the greatest idea ever. Think about it. Think about how they've set this up. I'm not saying this is what's going to happen, but Moffat, we know you listen. I want this. We work this into the part of this prophecy, the fall of the 11th, the fills of Trenzalore, and we get that voiceover narration. It's Matt Smith talking about the day he died or whatever. And we get to the end of the episode, and he's hit, and he regenerates, and the screen goes white. Like Pearly Gates kind of thing, right? So, whoosh, white. And with Matt Smith still doing narration, his life passes before his eyes, but it's all Paul McGann for a season. Maybe everybody comes back, but we're only going to see Paul McGann for a full season. And Matt Smith maybe could even intro each episode, whatever. I don't care. And then at the end of that, we can go on to the 12th Doctor. I was so jazzed by the idea of that. Like, wow, that's brilliant. I wish I'd thought of it. And I can't credit the guy because I don't know who came up with it on Facebook. But it's just like, you're looking at me like I'm nuts. You're just expression.
I think it's a wild enough theory that
it would be awesome.
Know. I don't think it's a theory. I don't think it's like anybody saying this is planned. I think it's just an idea that wow, I would totally get behind that if that was the case.
Yeah, I that's cool.
It'd be awesome. It just never happened.
Yeah, I don't like to get excited about things that I know never come. So.
Oh, well, you know, that's why I live my life in that. you remember I completely invented the Lego Doctor Who video game.
Right,
which
right.
We'll never see. And I got Chrissy excited about it, and then we were all disappointed. Yeah,
that would be cool. That would be cool. I really do think they're leading up to bringing Paul McGann back for a multi-doctor story.
I still hope
because
so.
I really think that, I mean, suddenly on the cover of this last Big Finish audio that he was in, he's in the leather jacket with the short hair
and
the new Sonic that he previewed for the Dragon Con almost 2 years ago now. I mean, it's, come on. There's something. They're working up to something. And then he can be on the 50th anniversary or whatever episode without having to wear that wig, which is what he doesn't want to do. So, I mean, I totally think they're leading up to something. We're going to see Paul come back in some way.
I certainly
hope so.
All right, what's on the schedule next week, Sean?
Next week, Friday Night Who, September 28th, we are watching Blink.
Oh, why would we watch that?
Well, because it's got the Weeping Angels in it, Keith.
Oh.
And if you saw the trailer.
Yeah. What's back?
Weeping Angels.
But what's back in their storyline?
River.
But what's back in their storyline? What does Amy say about them feeding on... They send
original,
you back in time.
Their original,
the original
yes.
M.O.
They're yeah. not, they're
they
not
send back you back in time because they feed on that energy, that time energy. It's said they're going to go back to that old school Blink, Weeping Angel, which makes us the fact that we chose to watch Blink even more serendipitous.
I think it's funny you say old school Weeping Angel when there's been... Now...
In fairness, we had already watched the two-parter recently.
Right, recent. Yeah, more recent than
more,
Blink.
More recent than that.
So. Not much more recent, because we watched Blink as a lead-up to it. But.
No, we didn't. The two-parter was a Friday Night Who.
We did it for, let me look, Time of Angels, Flesh and Stone was July 6th.
Right, that's what I'm saying, but we've seen... Yeah, we watched...
It wasn't a lead-up
to
Blink.
Oh, we watched him more recently again. I wasn't there, that's why.
That's why you weren't there. You were like, I've seen this.
That's Friday night. Yeah.
So we'll have Blink, and then next week's episode, number 92, is The Angels Take Manhattan. And Farewell Ponds.
Farewell to the Ponds. Mm.
So we'll see how...
We'll still all be blubbering Saturday
we
or Sunday
will.
Night by the
probably.
Time we get to the camp.
There is a possibility that we may need to record late. I do not have all of the details yet. Mel got a call from her brother, Aaron, who's the truck driver.
Can we talk about this off mic?
No. he suffered a tragedy where apparently his house burned down.
Oh, no.
While he was away. And everybody's okay. Good. They're still kind of investigating what exactly happened. Wow. He's talking about, okay, that's it, I'm done with Tennessee, so he'll be relocating the family. And so there's a possibility that I will not only not be here for Friday Night Who, but I may not be here for the podcast. It may everything be delayed. I'm warning all of our listeners that we may have a delay next week if wind up, because we'll be leaving Friday night to drive to Tennessee to take him down there.
Gotcha.
He'll leave his truck here, and then we'll pack everybody up with whatever's left and come down. But because we don't have any details, I can't say here.
So we may end up recording Monday night instead of Sunday night.
Correct, because if I have to drive back from Tennessee on Sunday, I'm going to be a grumpy bear.
Cool. All right. No problem.
It'll be straight through.
So be warned, listener. There might be a delay. So.
And I will get further episode or further scheduling notes out for people who like to follow up, because obviously after that, then we have, finally, our Sonic Screwdriver reunion. You guys can go nuts at that point and talk all about it. And then we'll have some fun things on the docket after that.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this week. Until next week, I'm Glenn.
I'm Sean.
I'm Keith.
Cheers.
Good night, everyone.
Be seeing you.
You have been listening to Traveling the Vortex. Doctor Who and all of its associated programs are owned and trademarked by the BBC. No infringement is intended or implied.